The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Monday, 24th day of March, 2014. Let's take a quick look at the numbers. The Dow is down 58 points. Quite a turnaround from the way the day started. S&P down 13.5. NASDAQ down 69. Gold is down 24 bucks. Got a little green on my screen. Crude oil up 23 cents a barrel. So, they're calling it a reality check for the rally. Okay, fair enough. Here's my reality check. Right now, we're sitting at roughly 1846.50. And today is the 24th. If we subtract 7 days from the 24th, that would be the 17th. Let's go back to the 17th. And on the 17th, we were trading, oh, gosh, let's see what time it is. Time now, 9 a.m. Pacific time, okay. So we're going to go back to last Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. There it is, right there, 9 a.m. Pacific time, exactly 1 week ago today, and the open of that candle was 1850-50. Open of this candle was 1845-25. So what's my point? Well, my point is after a week of all this activity, we're 5 points below where we were this time last Monday. That's all. Not trying to say anything more than that, other than a lot of up, a lot of down, a lot of back, a lot of forth. And, you know, if this candle can grab a toehold here at last week's weekly trading zone, 1844/45, somehow that got off just a bit. There we go. If this hourly candle can grab a toehold and push its way up over the next hour, then we'll be exactly where we were, you know, this time last Monday, give or take a tick or two. And so that begs the bigger question, you know, are we done? Are we there yet? Is this it? I mean, where do we go from here? These and other important questions will, of course, be answered during today's radio broadcast. Now, if you're joining us for the very first time, a very special welcome to you. I'm so glad to have you with us. Many of you may be here for the first time because you're with us for the first time because you're a ninja trader. And as we all know, the big news out on Friday, CFRN indicators now run on Ninja. Now, questions came in over the weekend. Have you abandoned DT Pro? Have you turned your back? Have you gone the other way? Absolutely not. No. No, this has to do with this whole deal with the exchange and with some of our friends up in Canada. And there has always been that contingent of ninja traders who they came to CFRN, they fell in love with our indicators, but they weren't willing to go through another major life change, right? Major life changes are, let's see, the loss of a loved one, marriage, divorce, and changing your platform, in that order. Major life events. And so, as much as many folks truly loved the CFRN indicators and all that they were able to do, they just didn't want to walk away from the familiarity of that ninja platform that they had, you know, they had to walk away from some other platform to get accustomed to ninja unless they started out their life as a trader on the ninja platform. So either way, we did it for our friends up in Canada, the ones who are affected by this latest exchange business. And we thought, well, at the same time, if we're going to help those guys, all the people that have ever come knocking at our door and said, hey, how come we can't use this on Ninja? Well, the good news is you can. And so you might be in our audience today, our radio audience, for the very first time. And if you are, welcome. We're so glad to have you with us. You should be able to see a chart. It's the S&P 500 E-mini futures. If you're not able to see the chart, then perhaps you are logged in to simply the audio portion of the program. If you would like to be able to see the charts and participate in the discussion, here's what you do. Go to the homepage at cfrn.net. On the right-hand side of the page, click the great big microphone, follow the instructions. You'll be registered right up through the end of the month. Now, that means every day you're going to get an email that says, hey, the show starts at noon. When you're ready to join, click here. so you'll get in every day with one-click access. We all register on the first of the month, and then we're good to go right up through the end of the month. And seems like just yesterday we were getting registered for March, and here we are ready to register for April. My, how time flies. Now, the way it goes each and every day, we begin with our good word for the day. Then we go to Michael for a recap of everything that happened in the live trading room. Now, things were kind of a blur in there today. We hit our goal early on. In fact, Michael did a fantastic job juggling a lot of balls this morning, not only getting our points, trading the markets, answering questions, approving requests for the Ninja platform, signing machine ID numbers, etc., so forth, and so on. Yeah, he was a busy guy, but he got the job done. He always does. So let's get to that good word for the day. Then we'll get over to the daily recap. And then we'll go have a little chat with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com. Our good word for the day comes from Jeremiah, and it says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I have appointed you a prophet to the nations." Jeremiah 1:5. Do you share your innermost thoughts with anyone? Who really knows you and the thoughts of your heart and the secret things you intentionally keep hidden from others? Now, some may say it's their spouse or best friend, yet I suggest that even though you may think you know yourself well and that others see the real you, no one knows you more completely than the one who created you. God says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you." It only makes sense that to know and understand ourselves, we need a personal relationship with the one who knows us best. The good news is, God knows us best and loves us more than anyone else. He knows our failings, he knows our shortcomings, and he still loves us anyway. Through Christ, we have the privilege of having a personal relationship with our Creator. That relationship begins when we accept God's love through faith. It's a relationship that lasts forever, and that's incredibly good news, and that's our good word for the day. Moving back to the chart, here was the closing candle on Friday. Let's go find it. Let's go find that Friday candle. It's the 21st. That's the 23rd. So right here, March 21st, the week, last week, closed out at 1857 and a quarter. Okay? 1857.25. Early Friday, late Thursday, we broke out above the weekly trading zone, 68.69. Now, that was our highest weekly trading zone. It's not that unusual to break above the highest zone or the lowest zone. What's unusual is to close above the highest zone or close below the lowest zone. So we talked about it we talked all week that if it did happen, we'd have to wait until close of business on Friday. And so, of course, we talked about it during Friday's show as price was bouncing along up here. But sure enough, by close of business on Friday, price had wound its way back around and down to right here. So how does that help you? Well, again, in the world of trading, we don't have anything that's 100% absolute. The greatest probability of the time, when price pops out of a zone like this, whether it's on a Tuesday or a Friday, by the close of business, the end of the week, it will find its way back inside. And here's another week where, once again, it did its thing. Now, these are last week's zones that you see on the chart. Partners receive the weekly zones before the market opens every Monday. If you would like to take a 5-day free trial, indicators included, no credit card required, just send an email or visit cfrn.net/apply. You can also send an email to support@cfrn.net. You may have taken a free trial in the past, and you took your trial on the DT Pro platform, but maybe you were just a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool ninja guy, and you said, man, if you ever get the ninja platform, let me know. I'll be back. Love those indicators, want to be a partner, but I just love my ninja. Well, come on down, send the email, all right? Send the email, tell us what happened. Hey, because when you go to take the free trial, it's going to boot you out. It's going to turn you right around and say, get out. You already took a free trial. Don't run off. Just send an email to support@cfrn.net, and just, you know, a couple sentences. Hey, I took the trial in the past. I'd like to try again. Now, it doesn't have to be just because of the ninja issue. If it's been 6 months since you took your trial, you just simply want to take another trial, that's okay. We can do that. If it's specifically for the ninja issue, let us know up front. That way we can email you some instructions on what you need to do to get the Ninja indicators imported. It's a little different process than the DT Pro, but let us know so we can send you over the proper information. Okay, and with that, Michael, are we ready to do the recap?
Yes. Yeah.
Are you sure about
that?
Yeah,
we're ready. Let me slide this over here.
Man, you had your hands full this morning, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I'm almost through all the ones that are in the email right now. I almost got them. Actually, no, I don't. Sorry. I'll finish them all up in a few minutes. But let me do this recap. Yeah, it was fun this morning. Yeah, we had a good day. We usually have good days. Every day's a good day in my world. Every day is sunny here where I live. Hang on, I'm trying to fix my charts at the end. Let me move natural gas back where it belongs. Okay. And now I'll grab the charts.
Now, if you're on DT Pro, don't think you've got to go run change your platform or that there's some, you know, benefit to being on Ninja as opposed to DT Pro. That I'll let Michael explain it to you, but not the case. On DT Pro, you're good to go. And really, I mean, that's where we have our most experience. And if you're already there, if you have an issue, switching platforms is not going to fix the issue. If you have any kind of an issue that needs fixing, you know, we'll work together to fix that. But it's never it's never the charts, never the platform, rarely the indicators, and sometimes it can be the guru. Yeah, that's true. and sometimes the chat room can be, you know, kind of a drag. But usually the problem is somewhere between your ears. Either you haven't understood something properly along the way, so you're not executing the trades properly, or you have come with unrealistic expectations, you're striving for perfection, you've not yet learned to simply allow yourself to think and probabilities. And that's where we can help. All right, Mike, I can see your spreadsheet.
All right. All right, guys. Well, let me hit the record button, and I'll get rolling. Here we go. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Monday, the 24th day of March, 2014. Today, in the live trading room, we made 4 ticks profit on soybeans, 15 ticks profit on the Russell. We lost 3 ticks on crude oil. We made 6 ticks profit on gold. It took us 10 minutes and 2 trades to get to our goal of $100 a contract, and we took a total of 11 trades today. After a slow start on the month, we are now up to $3,785 per contract. You got to get to $5,000 by the end of the month. That's what I'm thinking. But that's where I'd like to be by the end of the month anyway, at least $5,000. $5,100 was our average last year. But we're at $3,785 per contract right now. We've taken 211 trades so far in the month of March. And if you apply an $8 commission to every single trade we've taken, you would have a net of $2,097 per contract. If you apply a $5 commission to every trade we've taken, you would have a net of $2,730 per contract. $2,730 per contract. So that's it. That's where we stand on the month, all right? $3,785 per contract. Now, let me show you all how to get into the live trading room or take the trial. Here we go, this page. If you have not taken a free trial with us, go here to cfrn.net in the right-hand column. Just put your name in here and your email address. Click register for a free trial. When you do that, you'll be sent a link, a confirmation link, in your email. If it's not in your email within a few minutes, you should check your spam folder or whatever other folder it might have gone into, because you will definitely have one sent to you. They're sent automatically within a few minutes. When you click on that link and confirm that you wanted to take the free trial, then we'll know at that point, we will know that you want to take the free trial. So you'll be sent a couple of emails. You'll be sent an initial email that tells you how to tells you what we're all about, how to get into the live trading room for the 5 business days, the 5 trials, and the five business days, 5 luxurious business days in our live trading room. But it'll give you the link and the password to get into there, and it'll also give you some information about downloading DT Pro. There's a second email that will be sent out that says, "Please watch this video." It's actually got 2 videos in it now. One is for NinjaTrader, and one is for DT Pro. The DT Pro one, it actually has some information about the actual trade setups. And the NinjaTrader one, it's just about applying the indicators and loading Ninja and all that. Okay? That's all there is to it. Please watch those videos. You'll be up to speed. If you do watch those videos, you'll be up to speed on your first day in the live trading room. Or not up to speed, but you won't be overwhelmed anyway. Okay? It won't come as such a surprise to you. And that, my friends, is that. So now let's get into the actual trades that we took. Okay, today, as we usually do, we'll start out with crude oil. On crude, and a sec. On crude today, we took 4 trades. And we made minus 3 ticks on crude. Right, our first trade on crude was right here. It was a short. This zone was from last week, but it was a short right here on a down close below the trend line. On that trade, I think we took 3 ticks profit. The next trade that we took was right over here. It was a long trade off the BBC. We lost 8 ticks on that. That put us at minus 5. Our next trade was right in here. It was a short on a close below the trend line. We took 2 ticks profit on that. That put us at minus 3. And then we had another short below the trend line right here. That was a break-even trade for us. That was the last trade that we took. Since the live trading room closed here at 11:30, there was some movement back up to last week's zone, but no more trade opportunities. Okay, there were no more opportunities in there. And that was it on the crude oil. Now, let me bring the Russell over. Have a look at the Russell. The Russell is what we got our goal on today. All right, this morning, well, it was a lot of movement on the Russell today. Oh, you know what? I didn't mark this chart up. That's why I'm not seeing anything. I marked up the Ninja chart that I used for the Russell today. All right, here's the Ninja chart. Now, the trades that we took this morning, it started out right here. We had an up close off the BBC. Oops, that wasn't where it started. It started way back here. All right, here we go. We had this down close off the BBC right here. That was, the cycle was blue, so you wouldn't need to close below the trend line, which would have happened over here. We missed that opportunity, and we missed this opportunity, which was a close, down below the trend line. Do I recommend trading the Russell over the S&P? It depends, John. It depends. It depends on you as a trader, really. Now, the S&P is a really slow-moving monster, and it's huge. As far as liquidity goes, compared to the Russell, the Russell's not terribly liquid, but, you know, it depends on you. It depends on your account size, depends on your ability to move quickly, because the Russell can move pretty quickly. Now that I've been trading crude oil and gold on a regular basis for a long time, the Russell's kind of slow, too, compared to that. But anyway, the question was, do I recommend trading the Russell over the S&P? And that's my answer. You're going to have more opportunity in the Russell than you'll have on the S&P. That's all. That's the main difference, really. The commissions will be higher on the Russell, too, I think, because it's on a different exchange. All right, so I took the down close here, and I didn't take it. Actually, I missed the down close here, but that was a shorting opportunity. The one that I did take was right here. I took this short on the down close right here, and I took 10 ticks profit on that. That was where I made the goal for the day. You can see I got out of the trade here at 9:40. And then I missed this trade, and I missed this trade. Actually, this one, the cycle was going up too far, but I did miss this one. And what else did I do on the Russell? I took that trade, and I missed this one in here. Seems like I took another one in here somewhere. Yeah, right over here. I took another short right over here. On this one, I got 5 ticks profit, I think. Is that where I got 5 ticks profit? I don't know. But the Russell was really moving down today. It had a lot of opportunity early on. It had a lot of opportunity. I miss these beautiful trades right in here. Some of our partners made, like, you know, 60 ticks on this, or 50 ticks or something like that on this move down. There were two opportunities in here. One, well, actually, there was an opportunity right here, a short trade right there, another one right there, and another one right over here and right there. Okay? There was plenty of opportunity in there to take some trades. It changed directions, started moving up. There was an opportunity to get long right in there. And then it came back down. Let's see. After it got through the zone, there was an opportunity to short right in here. And that's 11 o'clock. I don't know how I missed all that. But it was an opportunity to get short right in there. And the cycle was moving up too far in here to take any trades. But it turned around and went long right here. Long opportunity there. Another long opportunity there. And, well, this one was pretty close to the weekly trading zone, so I wouldn't have done that. But I would have done something from down here. Okay? And that got us through the live trading room this morning. Now, I'll quickly just go through the rest of the stuff that's happened since then. There was a shorting opportunity here, a long right in here, another long right here, a short right there, and that's pretty much it. If it pulls back right here, Iris, this is the Russell. Up here at the top, it says TF. Now, this is Ninja. See right up here? It says TF. This is the Russell 2000. Okay. But this is the Ninja Russell 2000. On DT Pro, it's the RLM. Okay. A down close on this bar would be another short trade on the Russell. Down close right there at 65.6. I don't know where my Russell Dom is. Okay, and that was it for the Russell, guys. We ended plus 15 ticks on the Russell. The next market is gold. What do we do on gold today? Just a couple of ticks and we made six ticks. I mean, just a couple of trades and we made six ticks. All right, our first trade on gold was right here. We got long right here on the up close off the BBC, and we took six ticks profit right up there. The next trade we took was here. It was a down close below the trend line. We ended up getting a break even on that one. Okay. Ended up break even on that. And let's see. Over here we had the down close below the trend line right in here, but I don't think I got filled. Well, I know I didn't get filled on it. I didn't get filled on that, but it was a down close below the trend line right there. Then we had the break. During the break, there was an up close right here that you could have gotten long on, and it didn't put in a higher swing. So this is topping action right here in the gold. Okay. It needs to close up above that box, or it's topping action. It'll probably make its way back down here to 1308.5. Okay. That is gold for the day. Now, soybeans. We took a couple of trades on the beans today. Our first trade was right in here. It was a down close off the BBC. We took four ticks profit on that. There was a long trade right in here that we missed, a short trade over here that we missed, and another long trade right in here that we moved our stop to break even on, and we got taken out at break even. Okay, that was it on the soybeans for us this morning. We ended plus four ticks on the soybeans. On the gold, we ended plus six ticks, and that was it. Now, I'll show you the ES. On the ES, we didn't take any trades on the ES, but there was, you know, a fair amount of movement. I just don't have an ES DOM open, so I couldn't do anything with it. But there was a short trade right here that went sideways for a long time before it finally went down. There was another short trade right here that was going right down into the zone. Another one over here that made a little bit of profit, not too much. And that was pretty much it on the ES in the live trading room. Okay. Back here on the natural gas, we didn't do anything with the gas today. It was stuffed in this range all morning. I don't know what happened to the gas. It was really, really active for like 2 months, and then it just stopped. But anyway, it is what it is. All right, so that's it, guys. That is my recap. Let me bring my spreadsheet back out. All right. We're up $3,785 per contract so far in the month of March. And if you have not taken a free trial with us, then just go here and put your name in and your email in. Now, we have the indicators on Ninja and on DT Pro. If you are taking the free trial with Ninja, you're going to need to send us your machine ID at some point, okay? Because that's how we authenticate with Ninja. That's how you authenticate the indicators. You know what? I'll just quickly go through what you need to do with the Ninja. You'll be sent some files. This file and this file and this file. These three files right here. You'll be sent. And when you get those files, you need to stick them in this place right here. The documents, NinjaTrader 7 bin custom folder. Okay, you need to stick them in that custom folder. That's where they need to be. Once you got them in that bin there, once you got them in the custom folder like that, then you need to do this. You need to go here. You need to go here in your control panel for Ninja. Go to Help and About. And send us your machine ID. It's right here. Okay, machine ID. We're going to need that. Your machine ID and your name. And then we can hook you up. Now, on the Ninja charts, I'll quickly go through this. On the Ninja charts, this is all in a video that will be sent to you, too. But if you go to, well, first you go to Data Series, set the value to 4 and the type to Range, unless you are using CME data, which means data from the CME exchange, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. That would be the ES, the NQ, the YM. If you're using data from them, you need to do a 3-tick range. Okay? But for all other markets, a 4-tick range. Okay? Do that. And then to make the bars, the base color of the bars white, you do that in here too. Color for down bars white, color for up bars white. Okay? Again, you go into Data Series to get there. right? Data series. All right, then go to indicators, and you'll have our indicators. All right, there's four things in here: CFRN indicator set, CFRN oscillators, CFRN paint bars, and the weekly trading zone. Start out with the indicator set. You see I have one down here. I'm just going to remove this one. Okay, you can see that's gone. I'll remove the paint bars. You can see paint bars are gone, and I'll remove the oscillator. You can see that's gone. All right. To apply the indicators, the Ninja indicators, you just click on CFRN indicator set, hit new, and it goes right in there like that. Okay. Just hit apply, and by default, it's all set up. So you'll have your support and resistance dots on. You'll have the BBC, the MA1, and the CFBL. Now, all those things are down here. CFBBC, the BL, which is the black step line, the MA1. Ignore the weekly trading zone. We're not using the weekly trading zone in this indicator. I made it separate. And the YBR is down here. Support and resistance dots are down here, too. They're individual things. Now, if you don't want one of these on, the thing to do, like if I didn't want the black line on there, I would go here to CFBL and make this transparent. Okay, just click on transparent, apply. Now the black line's gone. Okay, and that goes for any indicator that you want to make go away. Just make it transparent. Okay, that's the indicator set. Now the oscillators, you throw those on. We have, oops, I added an extra indicator. There's it. The oscillators. We have three oscillators. We have the CF slingshot, the chop bands, and the DMT. You can only have one of these set to true at a time. All right. If you want to have more than one oscillator down there, you need to have more than one of these. Like that. Okay. And if I want it to be something other than the slingshot, just shut that off and turn that on. And you see, now we have the chop bands. Okay. Or you can do that. Okay, that's how you flip those around. Now the paint bars, we have two kinds of paint bars. By default, it's the Flow PB, the orange and black. Okay, but if you want to use the trend change paint bars, then just set that to true and the other one to false, and you can use the trend change paint bars. Okay, that's all there is to it. All right, guys. So, that's it. That's how Ninja works. All right? And we traded off the Ninja Russell chart this morning in the live trading room. That's what we were doing in the live trading room. For what it's worth, I'm sticking with DT Pro. We went to Ninja because we had to come up with a solution for the Canadian guys. I know that opens the door to a lot of other people that already have a Ninja, who want a Ninja, and that's fine. There's no reason to switch to Ninja unless you want to. You don't have to. Okay, if you have DT Pro and you're happy with DT Pro, then stick with it. I am. All right. That's it, guys. I've shown you how to take the free trial. And if anybody has any questions about anything, you can give me a call at 949-423-6464. It's 949-423-6464. All right? That's it. Now we can head out to Vegas. I think.
Okay. All right. So did you walk through on the screen the process that somebody needs to go through?
Yes. You know what I didn't do? There's one thing I didn't do. Let me show everybody this. If you go to CFRN.net/trial, even if you're a CFRN partner already, if you have a Ninja and you want to go to Ninja, go here to CFRN trial. And right here, Dwayne's got it all spelled out for you. Okay?
Did I spell it out properly?
You know, I haven't done a grammar check or a spell check, but I think so.
Well,
I
just meant in the
I know what you mean.
Not so much for grammar. And yeah, has anyone actually pulled those files down? Because remember the one time we had an issue where when you pull those files down, they ended up getting corrupted for something else?
Yeah. Yeah. I think some people have taken the files down. If you have like Norton antivirus, two of these files, that, well, there's certain things that Norton doesn't like. It doesn't like files ending with XML. It doesn't like files ending with DLL. It doesn't like files with EXE. This first file is an XML file, and these other two are DLL files. So if you have Norton or some other antivirus protection thing, they may change the file type to something else. If you look at this, you save link as. This is an XML document, the first one. Save as type XML document. You got to make sure that when you save it, it does become an XML document.
Can you open that back up again?
You bet.
That thing you just had.
Yep. Here it is.
You were going to save it as. Can you pull that over a little bit further to the right?
Like this?
Yeah. What I'm curious is if you grab file one.
Oh, and drag it.
Will it just drop right into that folder?
Hang on, I gotta put it down here.
Is that a no?
I don't think so. Hang on, let me. No, you see it. You can't, because right now I can't do it right here. Hang on, let me try it a different way. Let me open up an explorer, a separate explorer, and see if I can drop it in there. Okay, because the problem was I had gotten to that window from clicking on here.
Gotcha.
But let's see if I can drag it now.
You can.
Yep, you can. But it comes in as file number one.
Ah, and so that's not good. So don't do it that way, guys.
Yeah. So what you're going to have to do...
Even if I renamed it instead of file one, even if I called it the same name... I still don't think that would, because it would be named, it would then have two names, I think. So, yeah, just follow the instructions that are up there. Right-click, download it to your computer.
Right-click, do save link as, and that's going to bring this thing up. Make sure it's the right kind of thing. Info 1 should be an XML document, and it should go not in downloads. It should go to documents, NinjaTrader 7. Bin, custom. Okay, just go right there. All right, and then the next one is a DLL. You do the same thing, save link as, and it goes in the same place. Documents, NinjaTrader 7, bin, custom. Okay, goes right in there. Same thing with the last one. Once you've done that, then you're going to have to send us your machine ID, and we can enable them for you. Okay.
You want to show them how to grab the machine ID?
Yeah, I did. I actually did it in the recording. I can do it again. I'll do it again. It only takes a second. To get the machine ID, for anybody who missed it at the beginning, you go to Help and About, and it's right here.
And then you want to just copy and paste that. Don't try to memorize it or write it down. Yeah. Highlight it and Control-C on your keyboard, copies.
Copy it.
Yeah, there you go.
And email it to us. All right, that's the way to do it.
Yep. And then you open an email and you paste it in. You know, I know that not everybody's on the same level as in regards to computer literacy, so we don't want to dumb it down, but we also don't want to talk over people's head. We want to meet you at your level, and so just feel comfortable telling us in an email or something, hey guys. I'm lost. And okay. But don't just say I'm lost. Tell us where you're lost. Like if you called me on the phone and said, hey Dwayne, I'm in Phoenix and I'm lost, I'd say, okay, all right. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to look around and tell me what you see. And then you would tell me, you know, some building you saw. Like, well, there's a building here that says Phoenix Library, and I'd go, oh, okay. Cool, I'll be right there to get you. Or if you didn't see any landmark, I'd say, try to find a street sign. Well, okay, there's a street sign here over my head. It says I'm on the corner of 21st Lane and El Dorado. Okay, great, I know where you're at. Stay right there, and I'll come get you. So see, if you just say I'm lost, then we're lost right along with you. If you can tell us where you're lost, how you got lost, what part of the process you fell off the road and into the ditch, will come to your rescue and help you. All right? All right.
Yep. All right.
Does that make sense, guys? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, just saying I'm lost, that's kind of like having a goal that says, well, I just want to make some money. That's not a well-defined goal. And so we need your SOS message to be well-defined. I did this, 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 and then that's where I got lost. Oh, okay. Then you just need to go do, do, do. And do, 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 do. All right.
All right.
So, does anybody have any questions on anything that we've covered today? We covered a lot. It was a really busy day. It was a busy weekend, busy day. It's going to be a busy week. I mean, there's a lot of people out there on the NinjaTrader platform. And we've been hounded, literally, for a few years. Well, why won't you put this on Ninja? Why don't you put this on Ninja? So we didn't really cave to the pressure. We just, because of other, you know, mitigating circumstances, turns out everybody got what they really wanted. And that is, a lot of people really wanted, you know, they came, they took the trial, they fell in love with the indicator set and all the possibilities that it presented, but they were just reluctant to leave the familiarity of the platform that they're on. I mean, there's something about changing platforms. I, you know, jokingly earlier I said it's like it's a major life event. You know, the list of major life events are, I think, the top, it's the loss of a loved one, and then marriage and divorce. Those go on the same line, probably. I don't know, maybe marriage first, then divorce, and then changing trading platforms. You know, there's just something about it that like totally freaks you out. You feel like a stranger in a strange land. You know, nothing makes sense. Everything acts different. Just like simple things, like today, Michael was saying that in DT Pro, you scroll the mouse one way to do something, and in Ninja, you scroll it the opposite way to do the other thing.
Yeah.
What was that?
To actually scroll on the chart. Like, this is Ninja, and I'm scrolling my mouse up right now, and you see how the chart is going to the left?
Yeah.
This is DT Pro, and I'm scrolling my mouse up, and it's going to the right.
Mm. Well, the one thing about Ninja is you can just grab that chart and drag it.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that with both of them, but you mean grab it like this and drag it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's handy. You just put your cursor on it and grab it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In TradeStation, that's called, you have to enable that. It's called background dragging, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that. I remember that now. It's all coming back to me.
But here's one more thing, guys. Changing platforms will not cure what ails you, okay? If you have an issue, you have a problem, whether it's with whatever it is you're trading now, or even if you're a partner and you're dealing with an issue, please don't think that leaping, you know, from one platform to another will fix the problem. It won't. Now, if you're not a partner, if you're using some other methodology, becoming a partner, now that very much could fix your problem. And in fact, we would like to think that it would fix your problem. Or it would at least enable us to point out what your problem is, and then we can point you on a path moving forward that will be helpful and beneficial to you. That's why we give you the 5-day free trial. Whether you're coming in on DT Pro or whether you're coming in on the Ninja, either way, that 5 days is for you to be able to spend a couple of days just kind of watching what Michael is doing in the live trading room, getting an understanding for the basic simplicity of the methodology, how it is just pure repetition, the same thing over and over and over and over and over. So by like the third day, you're like, hey, wait a minute. that guy's not that smart. He's just doing the same thing over and over. And then you, then it dawns on you. Then the big light bulb goes off. Oh, yeah, that's right. He said that on the first day. But it just seemed like he was jumping around so much and moving from market to market. I didn't really catch that he was actually doing the same thing over and over and over. But whether it's crude oil or natural gas or soybeans or the S&P 500, our methodology embraces the underlying rhythm of the market, okay? And when you have an auction-style market with buyers on the bid, and sellers on the ask, and price channeling back and forth, price is going to do the same thing. It doesn't matter what market it is. Price is going to rise until it finds resistance. And if there isn't enough buying pressure to power it through that resistance, price is going to begin to drop, and it will continue to drop until it finds to hold it up, at which point, if there's enough support, it won't just hold it, will begin to move it higher until it does what? Finds resistance. And that process will just keep repeating and repeating and repeating until the end of time. Or until they change the way the markets work. You know, there's no longer buyers on the bid and sellers on the ask. And I heard of some harebrained thing the other day they want to do in New York. The attorney general there, it's his way of thwarting the high-frequency traders. Have you heard about this, Michael?
No, I have not.
Gosh, what? How did that thing work? You'd only be able to place an order like every 30 seconds or something, or maybe every minute or 3 minutes. Somebody in the audience maybe read that article too. But what he's trying to do is create a level playing field for people that can't afford the expensive equipment with the co-located servers and all that kind of stuff. And did anybody else read that article?
I did not.
I'll see if anybody types anything in. Okay, well, David, I had asked him to come early because I knew we'd be done early, and now he's been patiently waiting. So, guys, we'll continue this discussion. We'll be talking about it all throughout the week and into who knows when. But if you have questions, 949-42-E-MINI, support@cfrn.net. Now, when you call that number and you get voicemail, don't hang up, because that'll just delay the process. Leave a message, okay? You leave a message, and somebody will get back with you shortly. If you hang up, nothing happens, all right? So be sure to leave a message. With that, we're going to pause for very brief station identification. We'll be right back with Mr. David Williams.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Hey, David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Michael. And good morning, everyone. Well, I got to tell you, it is such a beautiful day in Las Vegas, I cannot begin to tell you. It's just stunning. I hope it's half as nice in other areas, and I hope it's, and I know it's probably nicer in California, where, you know, where beautiful weather was born to run. How about you, Michael? How's your weather?
Well, if I look outside, I can see a blue sky, but it's 27 degrees.
Okay.
Not exactly springtime.
Not quite spring yet.
No. All right. No, not quite yet. We're actually probably going to get
still
snow.
27 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 19 this morning. It's warmed up to 27.
Wow. Well, it's beautiful here, and it's spring. It's spring is here. You know, the rose bushes are blooming, growing very quickly. You can probably measure them by the inch. They're growing so fast. You know, overnight. You know, you can clip them down. You know, I have a several rose bushes, and they're one of the ugliest plants when they don't have flowers on them. You know, they're not particularly attractive. You know, and they have the thorns. They're not particularly attractive. And those thorns are a way of protecting animals and, I mean, protecting the, you know, it from animals and from people. Nobody wants those thorns on them. And it's really difficult to not get stuck by them. If you try to put your hand in there, you can be super careful, but somehow there's always another thorn sticking somewhere that can get you. It's interesting how nature, how effectively nature knows how to do that, you know. So... But they're growing really fast, and our spring has really begun here. Dwayne, your spring must have begun in Arizona at this point.
Oh, yeah. But it gets pretty hot in the afternoons, and then at night it's very nice, and in the mornings it's very nice. But, the afternoons already have us thinking about what's around the corner.
Yeah. Well, let's try to enjoy this until that happens, which... What he's referring to is a Hades-like heat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something that no one would want to live in, but it does happen. I remember on a number of occasions being in Las Vegas and thinking to myself, you know, people can't live through this. And then I go to Arizona, and I see puddles on the ground where people actually melted.
They do.
And right. there's just like a liquid there, and you go, oh, that was a person.
There's a city department that's in charge of coming by and
cleaning that up.
Cleaning up that mess, exactly.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, so I hope everyone's having a nice turn into spring. Michael, you'll catch up with us. You know, you're a little behind the times there.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately.
So.
Sad, but true.
Yeah. But you guys have the real four seasons.
Yes. Yes, we do.
So, anyway, so that's that, and the markets are starting to move this week again, and we're coming into the end of the month of March, which seems a little odd if you think about it. We're already one quarter, in just a few days, we'll be one quarter of the way through 2014. What are you going to do with that, you know?
Yeah.
Is it going that fast for you, Michael, or is it just people that are elderly, like myself, and especially Dwayne?
Well, it's probably going about 20% slower for me because of the difference in our age.
Okay. But, well said. I think that's the right answer. I really do.
It's the truth, I think, right?
Yeah, no, I think it is.
True.
But no, it is going quickly. It is. It'll be Christmas before you know it.
Yeah. Well, we want to try to do something with this all this time. You know, they made time so that everything wouldn't happen all at once. It'd be hard to be confusing. So they spread it out over time.
It was originally designed to be put in a bottle. I think that's
that's from a song.
Jim Croce.
Yeah.
Jim Croce. Yeah.
So what's the latest on the Malaysia Airlines mystery?
I don't know, actually.
Malaysia Airlines deeply regrets that we have to assume the MH370 ended in the southern Indian Ocean. That's an official statement out from Malaysia Airlines. I don't know if that just came out or, you know, because sometimes they'll show stuff on the screen and it'll say news alert, but, like, it's not really news. However, just last week, we were somehow led to believe that both Rolls-Royce, the maker of the engine, and Boeing, the maker of the plane, had good reason to believe that, in fact, their machinery was in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
We did hear that, and I don't know if we heard that directly from Rolls-Royce or if people – it was a secondary source or – I don't know if Rolls –
I think they actually – I thought
maybe they did.
came right out and said it.
They may have. I'm not sure.
Let me see what the guys in the chat room have to say about all this. If they have anything to say about it. There was no mention of Pakistan in the UK news. It was always being sought in the ocean. Okay, thanks, Layla. All right. Anybody else heard anything, you know? Not rumor-wise, but, you know, news-wise.
Well, you know, one thing we can say is that we don't have evidence that the airplane, in order to get to Pakistan, if I'm not mistaken, and my geography may be incorrect, and somebody can please correct me, but I think they have to fly. India is no small little country. You have to fly over that to get to Pakistan, and India has tremendous radar resources that are on. It's marginally possible that they could have gotten through that airspace without having been detected late at night. Who knows? But since there is no evidence that it has landed, it seems like, I think people are, like they said, like Malaysia Airlines said, we're going on the assumption that the airplane was lost in the Indian Ocean, which is a tremendously huge body of water and tremendously deep and tremendously volatile out there. Huge waves. It takes most of your gasoline, you know, or kerosene, whatever, jet fuel to get there to make the search, and you can only search for a short time before you have to go back and fuel up. If a person wanted to crash an airplane in a place that would be really difficult to find and get at it, it would certainly be the Indian Ocean, if that was somebody's desire to do so. Is it possible that it landed in some other airstrip somewhere? Yes, it is possible. Is it possible that somehow radar missed it? Yeah, it's possible. But I think Malaysia is taking the stance, and I haven't read it yet, but probably just taking the stance that the assumption is that since we have no evidence otherwise, we're going to assume that it's in the ocean, because it can only be of one of two places. It either landed on ground under its own fuel, or it ran out of fuel and crashed into the ocean. That's it. I don't know of any other alternate. Could have crashed on the ground, but we would have known about that most likely.
Yeah, it probably didn't have enough fuel to make it over India, you know.
Maybe not, but it had a lot of fuel on it. That's one of the reasons people have speculated about that, is it had more than the usual amount for the trip it was taking originally, and it could fly for as much as 7 hours. That's a lot of flight. You can go some decent distance. But and then, Michael, I don't know if you were on, but somebody, a pilot, was talking. This was last week. I'm behind on the news right now, but last week was saying that at 35,000 feet, that airplane can fly for 30 to 45 minutes on a glide slope if the engines are off. That's really amazing. That's a long time.
It is.
Before you get to the stall speed and so on. On top of flying for 7 hours, it could have glided for another 35 minutes. So it probably had some distance it could fly. We'll see. You know, it's really possible that the airplane is gone forever at the bottom or somewhere in the Malaysian Ocean. And there was something this morning, Dwayne, you may have it in front of you, that they thought they, again, for the third time, thought they may have found some debris that they're checking out. The debris hasn't worked out in the past, but they have to check every one of those out, and it's the right thing to do. We'll see. You know, there's going to be endless conspiracy theories on this one if they don't find the plane.
Yeah.
You know that's coming.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, the ocean's just a cover-all because aliens took it to, you know, another, whatever it is. It's not even, it doesn't have to be aliens, but, and maybe rightfully so.
21 minutes ago, David, we had news that says, no survivors, Malaysia Flight 370 ended in the Indian Ocean. This is coming from USA Today, and USA Today is a very advertisement-heavy site, so it takes it a moment to load. A new analysis of electronic data shows that Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 with 239 people aboard ended in a remote area of the Indian Ocean. This is from Malaysia's Prime Minister. Prime Minister said the new information, based on unprecedented analysis of satellite data from Emirsat and by British and U.S. Accident investigators, show that the plane went down in the southern Indian Ocean west of Perth, Australia. This is a remote location far from any possible landing site. It's therefore with deep sadness and regret that I must inform you that according to this new data, that is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was another piece of news. Let's see if this is, I think this is going to be the same news that came out on CBS an hour ago. Relative shrieked and sobbed uncontrollably. The grief came pouring out after 17 days of waiting for definitive word. Yeah, this is again the statement put out by Malaysia's prime minister that, boy, you know, I don't want to be the one to start the conspiracy or the whatnot or the, there's just something about his statement that, I don't know, the way he says, you know, yeah, well, we finally decided and unprecedented and I don't know. Do the families need some closure? Yeah. And is maybe is that what this is? An attempt to give closure to the family members? I don't know. That it just the terminology.
I don't know. I don't know that they would just do that.
Maybe they wouldn't. I don't know.
Well, remember, they're not going to come out and just simply offer any explanation that later could be found to be completely untrue, not fact-based. This may not be based entirely on facts that they have, but it's probably the best assumption at this point. And if somebody needs to make an assumption, would be it.
Why did it take 19 days?
Because there's a lot of searching to go on and find.
Well, but he said unprecedented analysis of satellite data concluded that the flight, which disappeared March 8th, must have ended in the sea.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about that statement that doesn't sound very definitive to me. But
well, it's assumptive. It is an assumptive statement because they don't have the airplane. That's the best I can tell you is that it's an assumptive statement, but that they're comfortable enough at this point saying that's the very high likelihood of what they believe happened. If facts come up later that show that to be not the case, that'll be it. But as to why it takes 18 days, this is a very remote area. It takes a lot of manpower to put that together, you know, to do all checking, including manpower to go over satellite data of a single flight. There's 10,000 flights a day in out here. I don't know how many in Malaysia. There's a lot of legwork to be done to put all this together. Is that what you're asking about? Why it took 19 days? Why? How would they have known this in 3 days, as an example?
Well, yeah. I mean, whatever the data was that they had from the satellites. Now I'm seeing search crews have found potential debris in the South Indian Ocean. I'm just curious what they were able to get from the satellite 19 days ago that they didn't have today. You know, but then again, you know, I haven't kept up with my continuing education classes in satellite theory, so I'm certainly not one to make any kind of a statement about how long it takes to figure that stuff out.
It could take quite some time. There's quite a bit of data, and they may not have even begun looking at the satellite data until 3 or 4 days later because they thought they already knew where the plane was, or who knows, you know. Also, this isn't an American investigation primarily. It started out as a Malaysian investigation. Malaysia
does their things differently. We have the best investigators on the planet, probably. America does, with the FBI, Secret Service, and so on, forensically and otherwise. I mean, we lead in forensic stuff by far. America does. But we, you know, maybe our involvement in it didn't get heavier until 8 or 10 days in. You know, these things, you know, they unfold as they unfold. They're still going through, as I understood from last week, because I didn't see anything over the weekend, but they're still looking at the captain's simulator, his flight simulator that he has at his home, which is not unusual, and they're looking at all the erased and, you know, files and stuff to see if there's something in there that would indicate. There is one peculiar thing that there was some political guy that got thrown in jail for something that this guy really believed in, and he was upset about that.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, and that is interesting. That seems a little odd that the plane, I mean, it could be coincidence that he just went back to his job and the plane had problems that night. I don't know why he would want to necessarily kill. He was, by all accounts, a decent guy, excellent pilot. You know, did this event throw him for such a loop that he decided that he needed to end his life and others' life as a protest to what happened to this guy? I don't know. But that's part of the story. And that's why they're looking, that's one of the reasons they're looking at his stuff, both pilot stuff. So there you are.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, if you know, I'm certainly it's not the answer that all these families were looking for, but if it does give them the closure that they need to somehow, you know, start to get on with their lives and to not have this thing hanging there, then, you know, I guess I'm glad for that. I'm glad that they have closure. And if it turns out down the road that somehow somebody was wrong with their analysis and then and these people are actually alive, then, you know, so be it. At least there's a happy ending there. But for now, people have closure. And another tragedy, right here in America, this thing just north of Seattle, this mudslide, are you up on that?
I didn't get to the news over the weekend. So
yeah, there's, I forget how many confirmed fatalities, but there's 108 people on the missing list. Let me bring up a news feed of that. Let me just click this real quick. And we'll go here. And we'll just type in mudslide. I'm sure that's all it will take. Yep. Michael, are you still there? He's gone. I thought he was. Okay. More than 100 people remain missing after a massive mudslide that hit rural Snohomish County. Searchers don't expect to find any more survivors from Saturday's mudslide that killed at least 8 people and is estimated to contain 15 million cubic yards of debris. We're still in rescue mode at this time, but the situation is very grim. We've not found anyone still alive since Saturday. I don't know. I mean, yeah, this is some film footage of the area. Just, man, incredible amount of devastation. When that, you can't hear the audio on this, but does anyone here in the audience have any friends or family that live in that area? Let me scroll up through the chat.
And what is the area?
It's Snohomish County. It's north of Seattle.
Okay.
and there's 108. There's 8 confirmed fatalities and 108 missing. No one's been found since Saturday, and so the 108 missing, unfortunately, will probably turn into... Now, I don't know if these folks had any type of warning, you know, if they were told to evacuate, if they had time to evacuate. Let's see. County officials are encouraging people... Officials described the slide as a big wall of mud and debris. It blocked about a mile of Oregon 530 near the town of Oso, which has less than 200 residents, about 55 miles north of Seattle. Ground made unstable in recent heavy rainfall likely caused the slide. In the past 45 days, the area has had double its normal rainfall, at least 15 inches higher than normal. I mean, in Phoenix... We get like 15 inches of rain a decade, you know. I think we get 2-3 inches a year. Well, so that's years worth of rain for us. The area had a similar landslide in 2006, and erosion from the rain had caused the base of the previous slide to weaken. But this is a completely unforeseen slide. It happened in 2006, but this came out of nowhere. They had no warning.
There's your answer.
Yeah, they were not given any opportunity to... Let's see, what do we have in the chat box? Let's take a look. Okay. According to Pete, the last ping from the motors were around the borders of Pakistan. Suke says, I think it's possible a plane like this can fly undetected through Indian airspace. And Jay confirms what we already read. Layla confirms that the debris in the Indian Ocean, she read that as well. Earlier today, an Australian plane spotted two objects described as gray or green and circular, as well as orange and rectangular. Okay, that's just more about the debris. Oh, Gary's saying that that pilot you're referring to that had the thing on his computer, his wife had also left him. So,
Okay.
Yeah, and so no one has any family or friends in the Washington area where the mudslide was. Okay. All right. Well, our hearts and prayers do go out to those folks and to all of their families. Such a beautiful, beautiful part of the country up there. It rains a lot. It rains too much for me. This is like the opposite end of the spectrum here in Phoenix, where it hardly ever rains. But when I lived up in the Portland area, I thought it rained a lot there until I went to Seattle, and then I realized what it was really like for it to rain a lot. And but boy, when the rain does stop and the sun comes out, boy, it sure is beautiful.
Yeah.
Huge, big green trees and mountains, snow-capped mountains. I mean, just everything. It's very, very pretty. All right. Well, David, anything else you want to talk about or cover?
No, I didn't catch up on any of the news over the weekend, but I will get to it, as we, you know, later today and, take a look at things as well. It's interesting to see what the markets are doing. I don't know if there was any news related to the markets themselves or news that would have moved markets this weekend. If there's anything financial or otherwise that, was occurring.
Well, let's take a look at what economic reports came out. Let's there was anything late Friday night, over the weekend, or today. There we go. Should pop up here shortly. Okay. Daily economic reports. See what happened today. Come on. Oh, got to get that one daily advertisement, guys. Go there the first thing in the morning, get the ad out of the way, and then it doesn't come back the entire day. Let me just hit refresh, get it out of the way. All right. And they always try to hide the little X so you can't close it out. 4 a.m. this morning, we started having economic reports out of France. The first high impact came at 4:30 a.m. Eastern, German manufacturing. And then as we dropped down into the U.S., we had no high impact today in the U.S., no high impact news. There is a high impact news event. There was a high impact news event last night. Chinese HSBC manufacturing PMI. That's a high volatility event. But tomorrow, what do we have here in the U.S.? Great Britain's got their CPI. But here in the U.S., we have CB consumer confidence, and we have new home sales tomorrow. Draghi speaks tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern. So that could move the markets. And later in the week, Wednesday, we have core durable goods, Wednesday morning, high impact. And, boy, all the way up to Thursday, we have continuing jobless claims. That's not high impact. We have GDP. That's high impact. And pending home sales in the U.S., that'll come on Thursday. Boy, then we're all the way up to Friday. And not much in the way of news. We've got the Michigan consumer sentiment, which has been, it used to be a high impact. They've downgraded that to a moderate volatility. So it's not going to be economic reports that move the markets this week, guys. Now, could be news events, whether it's a man-made news event or a natural disaster.
And markets sometimes move without news of any kind.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So they'll have to find some other reason than just straight economic news. So, yeah, absolutely. If you want to just dive right into the S&P, Dave.
Sure.
We're back basically where we were. We're I don't know, about 5 points away from where we were this time last Monday, give or take.
Mm-hmm. Are you going on, or do you want me to get in there?
No. I was just saying, I don't have much to add because we had a lot of, jumping around last week. We ran up and ran down and whatnot.
Sure.
But here a week later, we're at the same spot.
Yeah. Actually, a decent amount of movement has happened in the S&P, relatively speaking. If you want, we'll get started on the S&P
yeah,
and let's
ahead.
Take a look at it. I have not updated all of my charts. We had our Reflected Wave seminar this last weekend. So I have a work to do to catch up and get everything done. It's funny when you're away from the markets. I was here on Friday, of course, and I was on your program on Friday. But normally I'm in on Sunday, and I normally stay later on Friday, with an analysis and so on of markets. And just that and just not being in the normal place that you're normally at, it's a little disorienting when you come back and you're looking at your screens and, you're trying to remember where you were, just before you left and started doing something different. And so, and we also had final rollover in some markets because last week ended the March contract and so on. So I have a little bit of catching up to do in the markets here. But On the program on Friday, I had mentioned that the next important top for the S&P was due on Monday plus or minus a day, and that if it had already gotten in, if it was already done that day, which was Friday, that it would run immediately to 1857 to 56. And Friday did just that. Friday's low was 1855.50. And there's a reason, obviously, for the call for that move. But normally, as I said on Friday as well, this would normally produce a multi-day decline. And so we're in that decline now. This is a we actually this weekend talked at the seminar about this very top and the where it was going. And I had even made a forecast at the seminar exactly that today's price movement, specifically today, would go lower to a very specific level based on reflected wave and so on. So we've seen that movement. We've gotten down to 1841.25 today. And, you know, the market has done nothing really wrong in terms of wide open breaks, you know, kind of more chaotic looking movement or anything. This is really very contained market movement. It is downward, and that always attracts people's attention just as the upward does. But nothing too terrible. Now, could we have a wide open break from this? And the answer is yes, we could. I think that's possible really at any point perhaps, but there are times when it is forecastable, when more chaotic, larger moves have a very high likelihood of being occurring or starting at a certain point. And we've done a few of those on your program before where we have forecast and said a specific large move is going to begin on a specific date and so on. But there's a lot of different ways that that can play out. I mean, meaning that there's a lot of different, it can happen for more than one technical reason. And so we pick one and we'll make a forecast off it, but there's many others that can be used to make that. And those kinds of chaotic moves, the really wide open breaks and big fast increases or declines in the market, they don't happen every single day. And so they can be tradable, and sometimes they frighten you or me to the point of saying, well, you know, maybe we'll just step aside and wait for something a little clearer at this point. But some of them can be very forecastable. There is a possibility for the S&P because it is in such an obviously nice position. And this is something that I remember saying this 10 years ago, I mean, to people, long before I was on your late radio program, actually not that long before, because, you know, we're inching in on our, I think, our ninth year. We're at some point here, Duane. You know, this is,
yeah,
we say
well.
Eight a lot, but I think we're inching in on the ninth at some point.
Yeah, April will mark, will begin the ninth year that we've been on the air.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a while. But about 10 years ago, I remember saying that the S&P in particular, and markets do this in particular, in general, but the S&P does it in particular, is it likes to paint a very pretty picture, which it then likes to destroy. So it paints a very nice, easy, trending, looking, perfect, everyone can see that it should stop here, and then it would go up higher, and then, you know, just beautiful little picture, and then it likes to just destroy that picture. And we don't quite have that yet. You know, it's not quite that easy and obvious yet to see it. But they are painting a pretty nice little picture here, these pullbacks and these little, you know, in this kind of range that we've been in. If you're viewing it from a weekly or daily chart, it's been pretty controlled, pretty nice, and all that stuff. And that always gets my attention, especially if it goes on for another week or two. It really would have my attention at that point, because those types of moves are often just merely setups for very chaotic destruction of the pretty picture that the S&P painted. So we're not quite there yet. We do have a few dates that I think are relatively important, and we're going to operate off of a few of these. One of them is March 27th for the S&P, and I think that's Thursday of this week. Let's see, 3 days plus, yeah. So that will be interesting, and we want to take advantage of that. I have more information on that, but we're going to, you know, this is fresh stuff right now, and I'm still getting myself reoriented to the markets with the role and everything else. Also, if you look at the S&P with a non-continuation chart, it will look differently on a weekly chart, dramatically differently on a weekly chart than it will with a continuation chart. So as an example, if you brought up this is the reason why charting is important to get it right. Just turning your platform on doesn't mean you have it right. Just having a platform doesn't mean you have it right. There are things that are going on that can dramatically alter the way that the market plays out on your chart. As an example, if you're not using a non-continuation chart, it will look to you on your chart as if last week closed near its highs when it didn't. It actually broke out to new highs in the March contract. So 1893.25, to be specific. That's if you don't use a continuation chart. But if you do put a continuation chart up, then you'll see the chart more like it actually played out. This has to do with March, you know, this whole look of the incorrect look of it. So if you run with no continue, I'm sorry, it's the other way around. If you run with no continuation, it will look correct. If you run it with continuation, you'll see March. I could show you the difference. I can toggle between them and show you the difference between those two. And so the correct one to use is the non-continuation, which won't have last week. Like, Dwayne, if you put a chart up right now, if you don't mind, could you flip into the weekly? I just want to see what yours...
weekly?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and you've got all your stuff on there, so it's a little hard to see it. But, yeah, that looks correct because you're not showing – so you're using a non-continuation chart.
Right.
If you used a continuation chart, then you would actually see – do you know how to switch yours to continuation?
Yeah, let me use a chart that doesn't have a bunch of writing on it.
Here, okay.
Let me just –
I just want to show this because this is a really good example of something that can happen on charts that, you know, I don't know if there is any really right or wrong way, but I think the right way is to not use continuation because it really looks different this time.
Well, on the DT Pro platform, you can't execute from a continuous chart for the very reason that it will give you a different look. So this is a continuation chart of the S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is a weekly continuation chart.
Okay, and that doesn't even look like ours either. That's interesting.
Okay, that's a continuation chart, weekly, Globex. So that's 24 hours a day. So we show a high of 1887.50. Now, if we go with ESM4 weekly.
Yeah, that's the normal look. That's the way it should look.
That's the March contract without the continuation.
Yeah, that's interesting because that even looks different. But either way, the point is that it is there is a difference, and you have to decide based on your parameters for trading what's going to work for you. Our chart looks somewhat like this does the last 3 weeks that you see there, and I believe that's the correct look that your chart should have because otherwise, if I switched you over to mine, I could show you what the March looks like, and it actually broke to new highs, and they closed it that way. So it's very interesting. You don't see that very often, that big of a difference between the contract set that just closed out, expired, and the new one. It's a little confusing verbally, but...
With this, you aren't able to see the previous contract. This is only showing you the June contract.
Right. No, I understand. Okay. And the other one is showing you the March contract, but it looked different than what you had put up on your screen.
Yeah, this one shows every contract. It just blends them all together.
Yep.
It takes you all
and there's
the way back.
Four different ways to blend them together, and you may or may not have the selection on which method you use on the blending on your platform.
Nope. We just have either the contract month or continuous. And so while continuous charts, and I tell everyone, it can if you're trying to get a bigger picture look at the market or something, it's okay to use for that purpose, but You should always be aware of what the current contract month looks like. And this platform, when you go to place a trade, it's going to force you to go to the current month before you can place an order using the DOM. It's aware that, you know, you could be placing an order
based
on information that is not exactly, you know, how it should be. So
yeah. Well, anyway, so all of that being said, that we're still inside the weekly top for the week of February 24th or March 3rd. That still rules the market. We have not had a big decline. It's been pretty, you know, in fact, surprisingly quiet so far. So we're going to do some work tonight to update what we think may happen. And this is what we do, you know, every day to try to figure out what the next important highly likely move in the S&P is going to be. And this move down that we have right now is a very easy and obvious setup, the multi-day sideways to lower with the initial move down to 57 from Friday's high of 76, excuse me, was the beginning of this move. So I don't have a lot more right now on the S&P, and we're in that same situation with a number of other markets, but I can talk generally about a few of them if you want to go around. And I'd also be open if somebody has some questions. We will do our best to answer your questions with the current markets and so on. if you want, we can do that. I do have
let's see if I have any questions in here. The French news last night moved the euro, but not the German report. A half hour after it, okay. Okay, there's no other market questions
okay.
Other than what about gold and crude, and I assume we'll get to those here in a minute.
Yeah, we can go right to them. I'll get my charts in order, and we'll put it all together for tomorrow's program to go over actual live charts. But let's see, a couple things about gold, because gold's had a pretty good decline today. And I don't know if any of the listeners are in Williams Edge or not, but we had forecast back in Williams Edge when the market on March 17th, when the market was attempting to reach the 1395, 1396 level, which I believed was easy for them to reach, excuse me, should have been easy to reach. And but the fact that they didn't reach it, and we talked about this on your program last week, that the fact that they couldn't reach it in and of itself is a very early important sign that there's a lot more selling pressure at work, and we talked about this last week, than one might initially suspect. And because the market didn't go back and make any second attempts, we initially missed the trade. And then out on the 18th, we put out a report that said gold would continue to decline from the then current prices, which were about 1360 and, you know, 1363 or so, down to two important levels. The first one was 1331, which they reached the very next day, which was the March 19th. And the second one was for calling for continued decline. This was all made on March 18th, the call for this. First down to 31, a bounce, and then a continued decline down to, and I can tell you now because we've almost reached it, 1304. And today's low is 1308.5. So this move began from 63 for a forecast down to 04, which is a pretty sizable move, you know, totaling about just about 60 points. That's about a $6,000 per contract move in gold. Pretty big considering the number of days that it took to do it, and it included a bounce in there as well. So what we're interested now is in seeing what we're able to do, what the market's able to do with the test or attempt at 1304 or 1302. First, if they're able to touch and reach it, which normally they would, and then what we might do with the market at that point. So all of this goes back to way back in November When any of you that were in Williams Edge know that we forecast that gold would touch 1315 and 1327 in February of 2014, and it did. In fact, it made a high of 1343, 44. It did do that. That meant that February was going to be a top plus or minus a month, and so it went over by 1 month. So this decline is actually pretty important, and the fact that they started the decline by being unable to reach 95 or 96 to us means this is probably a pretty important decline, and that's what prompted us to forecast. Had they reached 96 or 95, we would not have forecast a decline to 31 and then to 04 and 02. That forecast would have been different. But the fact that they weren't able to touch it does play a part in the subsequent forecast for us. Honestly, I thought they would have been easily able to touch that level, and they were not able to. So sometimes it's only after the fact that you can say, see how this weakness here influenced this decline. But as in an actual trading environment, it would have been very difficult to know that. Again, honestly, I was looking for a minor pullback, you know, and then another attempt up at 95, 96. And then they really started the move underway. And that was enough for us to be able to say, okay, they're not going to go retest that level, most likely. You never know anything for 100%, but they're likely not going to. And then they should go try 04 on the downside. And here we are. You know, today's low is 08, coming down from 63. And it's a beautiful example of gold and the size of the moves that are possible. If you ask me what's important, what's next in gold, this week is really important in gold, and how they handle our first what's next is how they handle this current decline that they're in. Today, tomorrow, and during this week, as to whether or not we're going to take some new action on the long side or short side or whatever. And we give this stuff out in Williams Edge as soon as we have it. And I'm a little behind only because we got out of here on Friday and I didn't do any work on Sunday. So I'm kind of giving you information that was being finished, you know, that was given out earlier and that's just finishing up now. So I don't have everything that I normally would today, including charts and so on. So if there's no questions or any comments on gold, we can go on to the bond market, which is having a nice rally today. We're not in the bonds right now. We believe that bonds are going to be bullish most of the year with the usual declines, but generally speaking, bullish. That means interest rates stay low for pretty much the remainder of the year. And we'll talk more about that, but we had a nice move up. You know, bonds have had a decent little advance. There is a little trade that is setting up by little, I mean, you know, a couple a day trade that's setting up. If you're interested in trading on the overnight, it's very important that you know and understand what the margins are for that. And you can call Bert Schlichter, and he won't be there today because, as I understand, Dwayne, he's on vacation. This is, what's the week called? When school's out,
spring break. Yeah, he'll be out for the entire week.
Yeah,
but,
so for the
Leslie
whole...
is there, and
Leslie's
she
there.
Can help you with most things. But if it's, you know, if it's something specifically for Bert, just give him his week, and he'll be back next Monday.
Yeah. Anyway, so there is a trade that we'll put out shortly in the bond market, based on its current position, and so that's something that would require a couple of day move. So, you know, check in with Leslie if you have an interest in following that. Let me click through these a little bit further. The euro had a decent decline last week, and we still believe the euro in general is going higher. And we've given out that target before. And those of you with reflected wave, or those of you that just finished the course, are, of course, aware of the March 20th bottom that is sending prices higher here for the time being in the euro. And so that's something that we're going to do some work on today as well to put together a trade. I think if I would say just as a generality, this is not a really super specific forecast, but if you're long in the euro already from this, you might want to consider holding into tomorrow, the 25th, and of course use a protective stop, because no matter how skilled you are in the market, if you don't use a stop, it's just as if you threw all those skills out the window and the trash guy came by and took them all away, because you won't be trading very long, because at some point you're going to be wrong. You just can't be 100% right, not only in the markets, but in anything. So if you know that's true in other areas of your life, just carry that over to this, and don't try to be – do your best to be right and take your best quality trades. But, you know, what I'm doing – and we talked about this weekend a little bit. Maybe another way of repeating what I've said so many times on this program is I am filtering through an awful lot of information that in many cases probably could be a decent trade. But because there's enough uncertainty, I really end up sort of with the best of breed trade. I try to filter out, and I'm really looking almost for what doesn't work for me, and that leaves over what does. You can take it either way. I'm looking for what does work, and I leave out the other. But in some ways, I'm sort of finding through the filtering process everything I don't have an interest in. Some stuff has real possibilities. You know, we've all seen that. I kind of like it because of this and that. But in the end, the majority of the stuff, the vast majority that we put out, is kind of the best of breed for us, you know, as a phrase, that we're putting out. And that leaves us in a position where the kinds of trades that we end up ultimately either forecasting or trading have a high probability, at least as far as we're concerned in terms of measuring the probabilities and in final outcome, of working. And that is really what we're looking for. We're looking for certainty. As much as we can, we're looking for high certainty. And I think most people are that way. But that feeling of looking for high certainty is also battled often by other feelings, which is that I need to make some money, or I need to get some action. I need to feel like I'm doing something with my life, because I personally remember sitting in front of the computer thinking, what productive thing am I doing with my life? You know, after years of doing it, I remember thinking, what am I doing? What is this product? Where's my productivity in life? Why am I here doing this? And honestly, I struggled with that bump in my road psychologically for some time. You know, what the heck am I doing? What is this? This doesn't do anybody any good. It's all the very things that people say that's great about it. You know, it has no product. It has no this. It has no that. Well, suddenly you can turn that around and say, then what good is it? You know, what's the purpose of this if you don't produce any product, if you're not doing anything, if you're not, you know, in commerce of some kind, and so on. This is a form of commerce, investing and trading in the markets, but I've said this before, I've never really sat well with the idea for me of trading. Just the concept of trading never really sat with me. Investing is much more my comfort area. I like the idea of investing in the markets. And so I ultimately solved for myself, you know, and this is just my own self way of doing it, but I really came to my own place of understanding that I'm really investing in the markets. It's short term. It's only a couple of days or sometimes a couple of weeks. In some of our options trades, sometimes a little longer, you know, selling premium. But in the end, I'm looking for very high probability periods of time, or periods of time where a very high probability price movement is, you know, very likely to occur. And I'm investing in that. And that just works better for me than trading does, you know, the idea of trading. So, and also the word investing for me, and you can use any word you want. I'm not dictating, nor am I downplaying the word trading for anybody else. I'm just saying that was a thing. What you call something often makes a big difference. You know, I can say your hair is blonde, but I can also point at your hair and say it's brashy or something, and it changes. It's still blonde, but it's kind of a brashy, or I don't know. You know, there's different ways of calling things, and you should take a look at what you call things in your own life, not what you tell people, because that's just your show. I'm talking about what you really call things inwardly, and I'm very sensitive personally to people who go out of their way to call things other than what they are for one reason or another, and everybody does it on some level. But putting that aside, what do you call things inwardly? You know, what name do you give things? Well, that name carries some weight with it. And so for me, the trading thing did carry some weight, and I like to think of what I do, and it helps me to think of it as investing, short-term, multi-day, for me, multi-day, multi-week type of investing. And so in the end, that works for me. It's a word. Go see for yourself if you haven't already. We talked about words, Duane, on the program before. What you call something can make a big difference to how you feel about it over time. And you may want to take a look at some other areas of your life where you use certain words and call things by certain names. And by changing what you call it, it can actually make a difference and open up a new little area in your life for you. So that's something to think about and take a look at. Okay, so moving on real quick, we were at the euro and we think higher prices are coming. They're rallying. Actually, just as we've been speaking, I think the euro popped up a little bit here as well, if I'm not mistaken, looking for a daily chart. Yeah, they're starting to move up here pretty good, and this is off of that March 20th bottom. On the crude oil, let's just take a minute to look at that.
60, they just hit a zone that we had, weekly trading zone from last week. What is that, 138.40/45. They spiked up on, I guess that would have been, that was earlier today. Okay, so if we go, the last time we hit that number was March 20th. We hit that zone, and then we hit it this morning. Is this an hourly chart? Yeah. We hit it at 1 a.m. Pacific time, so that's 4 a.m. Eastern, and then a few hours later, we come right back around. And so, you know, guys, I'm always talking about the old support and resistance, and I realize that's just terribly kind of old-fashioned. But, I mean, that there is just kind of a truth that I don't know how you can dispute that, you know, price came down, found support, rallied up, found the same resistance that it had found previously and came back down and found the same support that it had found previously and then went back up and found the same resistance. Now, will it do that forever? No, of course not, because then we wouldn't really have a market. Although if you go out to a really big macro view, the further out you go, you will see that kind of pinging back and forth action, except, you know, different markets are different. Things like currencies are different than things like, soybeans. Soybeans have a supply and demand component that the U.S. dollar, quite frankly, doesn't have because they can, quote-unquote, print more dollars. And the S&P, which is an idea more than it is a product, they don't, when we just rolled over into the June contract, they didn't say, oh, and by the way, we have, you know, 5 billion contracts in inventory for the June. It's really a hard concept for a lot of people, especially people who have come from a background of buying and selling equities, stocks, that you're now dealing in an instrument that has no, there's no capacity involved. There's no, I mean, forget naked shorting in stocks where people are allowed to sell things they don't even own. Just forget that. If you just look at stocks as a straight game, the way you should or the way it should be, you know, a company has a certain number of shares. And so once those shares get bought up, if somebody else wants to own some of those shares, then they have to be willing to pay a little more money. And that's, you know, how prices appreciate. But with the S&P, it's appreciating based on perception of value, not really based upon supply and demand. And so we see certain markets where we can get into these ranges, both on a micro level and a macro level. But with something like the S&P, that is going to be an ever-increasing number. Stocks can go to zero, but the S&P will never go to zero because the week of the herd is always called out, and they have a committee that they have this long laundry list of things they look at when they include a company in the S&P. So over time, now we can you see the S&P crash from 1500 and change down to 666? Yep, we saw that. But it didn't go to zero, did it? No, it turned around and it spent the next few years as they called the weak and brought in the strong. David just used the term best of breed. That's the term I've used for a long time in regards to the S&P. Over time, it's always going to climb because they're always bringing in, you know, the stronger companies, the better perform. And it's not just based on market cap. But anyway, so we've watched the euro today, or over the last few days, go from resistance to support to resistance to support to resistance. That won't keep on forever. In fact, looks like here, this is a very strong bullish hour. Got 2 minutes left. This may be where we actually make that break to the upside. So, David, I think you'd already mentioned another market you were ready to go to. What was it?
Yeah, the crude oil market would be next for us. Let's see. We had I had just mentioned I'm only mentioning this because this is actually in the process of completing a trade that we'd given out last week. Again, we don't have anything new today because of the over the weekend. You know, we were away from the markets where we normally are here. But the forecast was for crude to have a fast advance from, I forgot what the exact number was, but it was down near $98 up to $100.25, which it was reached on Friday. The high on Friday was exactly $100.25. And that was a several thousand dollar per contract move. But we also have one other target I can give out now. It's not very much higher, but it's the $100. The real target was $100.25 and then $100.45. So they've completed the 25 today. They got up to 29, $100.29. And I expect this move to run and to continue into tomorrow. The original forecast was for the market to move up roughly from the $98 level, which was back on the 20th. I don't have the number right in front of me. In fact, if you give me just a minute, I can actually get the exact number. It's not really that important because the move is over. It was from 97.97. We were looking for the market to move, stay above 97.97, and if it did, and it did do so, then it would run up and the advance would continue into Tuesday, March 25th. So this is about a four-day move that was being forecast for the crude oil, and it would reach $100.25 and then $100.45. So tomorrow is important. You know, most of the move has happened. That's why I can give this out now. Most of the move has already happened, but any of you that are in Williams Edge that got the, you know, update last week, you know about this, and it was very clearly spelled out. We're basically waiting for the market to make a test or attempt or exceed $100.45 into Tuesday, March 25th, which is tomorrow. And then I would be very interested in taking possible action. Even if they blow through that, and even if we have a really good advance off of this, I still think the 25th is going to be an important date, plus or minus a day right in that time frame, for possible new short position in the crude oil market. So actually, when we're back from lunch today, this is going to be one of the first markets that I look at because we're just finishing a move, and we could, you know, this is one of those trades where you could be literally getting out of one and getting into another. And that's lovely. A lot of times you don't see that necessarily in a single market. You get out of one trade and then you go to another market and get into another trade. This one has some better possibilities than that. So we'll see. And then the bigger picture, which I've mentioned before also for crude oil, is that we think later in the year we have a much larger, and I always pause when I use the word cycle because it isn't a cycle, but I've never been able to figure out a better word than cycle, but it isn't actually a cycle. that comes up later in this year, in the month of May. So we'll talk more about that as we get into it, but we have a real interest in doing something with crude to take advantage of that. That would be probably a multi-week move, maybe less, depending on how fast, you know, a portion of the move gets done and so on. And then, Duane, we can just really briefly cover a couple other markets.
Martin has a question for you.
Please.
David, was Williams Edge Project a type of cause and effect, a meditation or dream or revelation, or was it because you studied the charts and came up with this amazing solution as to how the market works?
Okay. If for me, thank you for the question. For me, Williams Edge came about in about two steps. I mean, the idea of the whole thing. Step number one was that I was dealing with a lot of individuals that would call me every day, and some of them that may perhaps be listening on this radio station know this, and I would take call after call after call, repeating information. And it got to the point where it was actually too much to do. And I said, we need to really put a group together where I can put this information out one time and not have to take the 10 calls in a day. And a lot of the people that were making the calls, you know, felt that there was a personal thing there, because you have the person on the phone, you're talking to them, they can ask a lot of different questions, and that was good information. Rather than just getting a forecast or reading something, they liked the idea of talking and going back and forth. And it was just too much for me to handle at some point, in terms of just speaking too much and the distraction and having hung up the phone and then 5 minutes later having to repeat that same information to somebody else. Great guy, but you're tired of talking at that point. Imagine that, me, tired of talking. But I was. You know, Duane, I'm sure you go through this on your end as well. You know, there's people are going to call and they're going to ask you questions that you're going to have to – that you want to answer, but there may be too many people that want you to do that, so you can't do it in a
Yeah, and about the fifth time of the day that you repeat it,
exactly.
You don't have the same vehement
right.
enthusiasm in your voice that you had with the first guy. And so the fifth guy that calls, he kind of gets shortchanged a little bit, because, you know, the first time you spill the beans, you were actually very excited about the information you were giving. But then by that fifth call, you're kind of like just...
Yeah,
you're actually just remembering what you said on the last call and repeating it.
Yeah, and people do read, believe it or not, I mean, they do read how you're saying what you're saying along with what you're saying. And I particularly do that with people. I've noticed that in myself. So anyway, it got to the point where we said, or I said, we need a group of some kind. This was a little over 2 years ago. And then we started a group where we could get together, and it wasn't public and it wasn't for money. It was just a group of people. We'd get together and I would go over this information with them in a group format. And I was only too happy to do it. It was easy to do in that group format. And so that was step one. And step two from that was that I started spending more and more time to put those trades together for them. And I really, really sort of saw a new light of what I could do with our methodologies and so on, putting those kinds of setups together. So at some point we made it a product for that group. And then finally, I think the third thing that happened was that originally they didn't really want, you know, quote unquote, the public in, but I don't believe in that nonsense. I believe it's not going to hurt the trade if somebody else knows about it. And we ended up with a product. And so that's essentially how it got to that point. The name Williams Edge was, I told you originally, it was embarrassing to me. It really is. I think it's too brash and bold to put your name in a product. But in the end, and it wasn't my idea, I swear to you, it was not my idea to say it and to put it together. But it did get put together, and we all started calling it that, and I was comfortable because it wasn't something we put out. And even the first, when we started on your program talking about it, I just rubbed me the wrong way. Now, it comes right off my lips without even thinking about it, because it doesn't, I'm kind of past that. So in the end, that's what it is. It's a product for people who maybe want to build their account and they want to get our best trades that we put out using both Reflected Wave and our other methodologies. And I really enjoy putting those out, And I really want to stress to people, there's, you know, everybody knows there's a million different ways to trade. You can trade the short term, the medium, and the long. You can trade with moving averages, or you can go all the way out to some, you know, you can be an Elliott wave, or you can be in any number of different, or maybe your own particular take on the market. But in the final analysis, you have to have something that really makes a connection with you. You have to make this your own. The people that learn Dwayne and Michael's methodology, it has to be made your own in order to really make it work. The people that came to our Reflected Wave seminar, it has to get so deep. You have to take it in and really work with it so that it actually is your own. Just like if somebody taught you to ride a bike and you went to the David Williams bicycle school and I taught you how to ride a bicycle, at some point you're going to know how to do it exactly, and it's really not going to have a name to it anymore. You just know how to do it now. You're not going to be saying, I ride the David Williams method. You're just riding a bike at that point. You know, it's gone beyond the names and the methods. That's where you have to get to with whatever method you finalize. It can't even be called anything. It's just you get it, you understand it, you're putting it to work in the market. You can call it whatever you want. But the name isn't the thing. You know, the thing is the act of trading and managing and all that stuff. So that's basically it. And I appreciate the compliment in there that you said. And we work very hard, as does Dwayne and Michael. We all work very hard to put out the best work that we have. And it means a lot to me to spend the extra time to put these trades together. I want to be right. I want to be able to use whatever knowledge I have in its highest and best form. You can never know anything at 100%. But if you have a high percentage of if there's a high percentage that something is going to happen, I love the idea of investing in that. It's almost like saying, one last thing I was going to say, it's almost like saying a person comes to you with a tip that some company is going to, you know, go to the moon, you know, or have some great run, and you invest in it and you're going to be in it for 2 or 3 years or something because you think it's going to really run. That's a tip. Maybe it's high probability or not. I think of these trades as miniature versions of that. They're very high probability events that might take 2 or 3 days or maybe a week or two to complete. And I really love the idea of the high probability investing in that period of time. I'm not waiting 3 years. I'm just going in now. That's kind of what it's all about for us in that particular product. So there you are. I hope that's helpful. Anything else, Dwayne, or any other?
Ted wants to know if you're still looking for 140.73 in the euro.
Yes, we are. We have no reason to believe otherwise yet. And by the way, for people that are following that trade, this particular bottom that we just put in on March 20th in the euro, how they respond off this bottom at this point in the run-up, at this point in time, with all this time having passed, this is pretty important now. So what they're doing. So some of our people are long because they know about the bottom and so on. But because we weren't here, we didn't get a chance to really put that trade into effect. And so the only people that would be in that are people that trade off of the information. They don't necessarily need us to give them the specifics on that one. But for all intents and purposes, yes, Ed, we do believe that that's going to be the case. And the dollar is the exact opposite. The dollar had a nice rally, which we had a trade for, a forecast for. It completed that, and we told people today in the meeting that the dollar's the forecast was that the dollar would move up into March 25th, plus or minus a day, and then begin a decline. And you can see that the top came one day early on March 24th, and today the decline in the dollar is commensurate, you know, with the move up in the euro. I wish I had more to tell you today, but I don't because we just haven't done it all. There are a couple of interesting things other than this that are going on. The Australian dollar has had a tremendous some really good volatility. I don't know if you've looked at it lately, Dwayne, but the Aussie dollar's had some really big swings back and forth, and we're following that. We're flat in that right now, and I'm going to spend some time with that. I don't know if there's anything else of real interests. We do have something that's for subscribers only that's based in copper right now. We're watching. We're flat in it right now, but you can come and take a trial and check it out. Nobody will call you or try to sell you anything after you take a trial from us, so just rest assured that if you take a trial, it's all on you. The only people that buy our products, whatever they are people who want them, and not because we're pushing them to or calling them back and selling them. We want to show you what we can do and what the product can do, and if you like it, you'll come around to deciding to use it on your own time. I think, the only other one that we had that I did want to maybe make a mention of, since it's already happened, was the soybeans, which we had talked about last week, but I might as well mention it because they reached the deeper targets. Soybeans on March 20th, we put out a report that soybeans would decline almost immediately to $14.12. At the time, they were trading at about $14.46. The very next day, they declined to $14.04, and then they completed a further target, which there were two, and it landed sort of right in between them. One was about $13.96 down to, it was really kind of range, down to $13.88, and today's low was $13.93. So they kind of completed that final range of level that we felt they would complete on this decline. And we'll see what we can come up with today in soybeans. So unless you have a question for us on markets, I don't know if there's anything else we have for you today on markets, but we will have more later in the week as we pick
Tim,
back up
here's
here.
A question. David said that he has work to do on S&P for its next direction, but didn't he say last week that this week is a weekly bottom in the S&P?
Yes. As a matter of fact, let me get over to the S&P with you. We had a number of forecasts that we made on live radio last week about the S&P, and if I had my stuff in front of me, but one of them specifically was made on, we talked about exactly what he said. We talked about on Friday that the S&P would decline to, as soon as the top was in, that the S&P would immediately go to 1857. And Friday, the top got put in, and the market immediately went to 1856.75 and so on. You know, went straight down to that number. Now, there's a very important reason why it had to do it immediately rather than going sideways or waiting for it. And those are investable moments. You know, that doesn't always happen that you can say that. And the market has further declined. We talked last week, what the fellow is asking about is the idea that I want to bring the chart up here. Give me just a minute. Let me switch over. I don't have the big multi-screen set up. I'm saving up for that. No, I just trade with one screen. Yeah, I'll get there. And I think at this point, I could almost see using a second monitor at this point because we are following enough markets now where it is getting a little cumbersome to flip through these. But let me get to the chart where that weekly idea came from. But yes, the week of March 24th was the on-time week for the bottom off of the reflected wave top, the weekly top that came on March 3rd. That's what we originally were forecasting. So I felt last week that it was probably, possibly anyway, true that the market had already bottomed 1 week early because they did all the numbers. They did, you know, 1430 or 1832 and all the stuff that needed to happen happened. So yes, the listener's exactly question is correct. The exact thing that we had forecast in Williams Edge was 1832 due on the week of March 24th, plus or minus a week. It sure looked like they finished it last week. They certainly had a good, you know, close. So if we do get down, let's just say we do get down to 32 this week, it will be interesting to see, or a little lower, how they handle that. And I will have better information, you know, for us tomorrow, hopefully, if we can put something together. So, yeah, you're exactly correct. This is the on-time week. Okey-doke. So there you are. And if you want my baking recipes for coconut bread, I'm happy to give that out as well. No, just joking. I don't bake. Dwayne, do you cook?
Can I cook? Yes. Do I cook? No.
Okay.
I used to really enjoy it, and I used to do it quite a bit. And, I just... Yeah, I kind of lost my desire. Yeah, I used to really enjoy getting in and, you know, whipping up different things and had all my own little recipes for this thing and that thing. And, yeah, it was. I guess it was a phase. Who knows? Maybe I'll phase back through it again.
All right. Someday. Well, listen, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Go ahead, Dwayne. I was just going to say It's 11:15. I do have to run, but we thanks for the questions, everybody. Thanks for the time on the markets, and I'll have hopefully better information as the week goes on. And Dwayne, we'll be back with you tomorrow. We'll put it all together.
All right, David.
Thanks so much. See you then.
Have a good afternoon. Wrap it up, guys. Unless you have a specific question about something, unless you have a specific question about a specific thing, specific market, whatever that might be, go ahead, type it into the chat box, and I'll be happy to take a look at it for you. Otherwise, that's going to wrap it up for this Monday. S&P is down 10, NASDAQ is down 57, the Dow's down 29, gold really down, $24 on the day. Crude oil, still the only green on my screen, up 34 cents. Crude was the only green on the screen at the beginning of the show, and now here we are at the end of the show. And let's see, our current price, 1848, and we're in the 11 a.m. Pacific time hour of the market, and price is at 1847. So let's go look exactly 1 week back. Oh, I better write it down or I'll just forget. 1847.75. All right. So we're going to go back to the 17th. Come on. There you go. And we're going to go to the 11 o'clock hour, exactly 7 days ago. Now that hour opened at 51.50 and it closed at 52.75, had a high of 54 and a low of 50, so we'll call it 52. Just kind of right smack dab in the middle there, 1852. So we fast forward 1 week, and there's 1852. So, you know, I've mentioned this a couple times today. Why? Why is that important? Why does it matter? Well, I don't know that it necessarily matters, per se. But just walk with me real quick through what happened in the past week. Sunday night, Globex open. Not last night, but a week ago. See, there's Friday's close a week ago. There's the Globex open Sunday night a week ago, and we got down to a low of almost 1823. Remember, these are last week's weekly trading zones. Partners get the zones in their email before the market opens every Monday, and as the week progresses, then I, you know, put them up on the screen for the rest of the audience. But we had a nice little move. Zone, up to the zone, up to the zone, just in increments, you know, a little pullback, a little consolidation, a little coiling, and then a move. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4 hours of retracement, and then 1 hour, boom. Now look at the time, 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Eastern. We always tend to see big moves around that time of day. So we went through all of that and all of this. And we pulled back, and then we pushed higher. And we pulled back, and this morning we've pushed higher. And my whole point is nothing more than we're simply off a couple of points from where we were this time last Monday. So one could say, well, not much has happened. If you looked at it from a macro view, you'd go, boy, the market's really been quiet. Well, this time last Monday, price was 1852, and right now price is 1848.50. Wow. Boy, that's just been really quiet. Nothing's happened. But yet we know that, you know, fortunes were made and lost over the course of that week. Am I leading up to some really deep philosophical point? Sorry. If you have one you want to share, feel free to type it in and I'll share it for you. But no. But I do find it fascinating from time to time when I pause to reflect and think about how furiously, you know, men work. I mean, think about all the late night meetings, closed door meetings, you know, people lost their jobs over mistakes made, and people got promotions that perhaps they didn't deserve because price went higher or failed to go lower. You follow what I'm saying? And in the grand scheme, where are we? Same place. I know you think I'm leading up to something. And at this point, I really wish I was. I should have come up with some really deep, profound thing to end on, but that's it. A week's gone by, and we're pretty much where we were. Could that be topping action? Maybe I'll leave you with a question. In the live trading room, those of you who participate in the live trading room are part of that, whether you're a partner or maybe you happen to be on a trial right now, you'll hear that phrase. You'll hear Michael use that a lot, topping action, bottoming action. You know, what does that really mean? If we go to a daily chart, we just talked about, now this is weekly, okay? Now weekly, we kind of have a little rounding top there. If we take this weekly and just look at the last leg up on the weekly chart, what do we have? We have a, hang on, 38% retracement on the weekly from the low to the high, 38% retracement. Okay, now let's look at it daily. It's not so much the Fib I wanted you to see as I wanted you to see that kind of rounding top there. Let's go daily. Scrunch that up a little bit. Okay. Now, see, this had the appearance of a rounding top. Okay. Often we see V bottoms and rounding tops. You can see V tops too, but rounding tops tend to be a little more common. So this easily, one could have looked at that back during that period of time and said, "Yeah, it looks like it's putting in a top." And I'm sure there were, you know, plenty of people out there talking and saying, "Yep, this definitely, you know, market definitely putting in a top here." That was way back at 1680. Okay. And we had another, that definitely looks like a rounding top. And again. And then smaller ones. Then we finally had a, you know, fairly decent pullback. In fact, from that swing low. That swing high, we actually got a 50% retracement on that leg, okay? And then, another little rounding kind of a top there. So when is the top really going to come? Never. If you're talking about the S&P, there'll be pullbacks. There may be, you know, mini crashes, flash crashes, crashes, whatever kind of name you want to call it. But because of that best of breed philosophy behind the S&P, which makes it unique, right? Unlike a currency, unlike a metal, unlike a grain, this is a index of 500 companies. There's a committee over at Standard & Poor's. They have their checklist, and you know, a lot of times people think it has to do just with market cap, the 500 companies with the largest market cap. That's not true. I mean, they do look at market cap, but it is in no way is that a deciding factor. They look for overall strength and health and potential, and if you're a horse person, but they actually do look at a horse's teeth to get an idea of the overall health of the horse. And so that's what this S&P committee does, is they look at the teeth of these individual companies and they try to get a feel for what the overall health is. And then they make their decision of who gets taken out, and every time somebody gets taken out, somebody gets put in. And nobody can get put in until somebody gets taken out, because there's only room for 500. It used to be they would consider and add multinational companies. The committee has said here in the last couple of years, or within the last year, they've made the statement that they're only going to add U.S.-based companies. Now, what led to that decision? I don't know. But if you Google S&P criteria, CFRN, I think that'll take you to a blog post I wrote that shares that laundry list with you, if you even have an interest. Because you might be asking yourself, well, that's all kind of interesting. Barely. But how does that affect my ability to get 2 points tomorrow or to make $100 per contract? Well, the answer is it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. What affects your ability to be able to make your daily goal tomorrow, whatever that might be? Now, for those who go through our mentoring program, our training program, as a CFRN partner, we teach you to work with a daily goal of $100 per contract per day. The goal is within 90 days that you are guru free. You no longer need anybody to tell you when to get in or when to get out. You're able to sit down in front of any chart. Doesn't matter if it's beans or metals or indices or currencies. You're able to, at a glance, using the indicator set we provide, whether it's on DT Pro or on Ninja, first glance, who's in charge. Is it the bulls or is it the bears? When did they take charge? At what price? At what time? What day? We know these things just by looking at the chart. And you're able to, without any outside influences, without having to go check any other list or any other website or opening up the Wall Street Journal or turning on the CNBC or logging into a chat room, you're able to determine if there's a trade setting up or not. I think the only chart I have right now that the indicators are loaded on is the silver chart right here. And I have the silver set at a two-tick range only because silver pays $25 per tick. Most everything we deal with pays either $12.50 per tick or $10 per tick. Margins are very high in silver, by the way. And so if you're new to trading, silver's probably not going to be something that you're going to want to trade coming right out of the gate. You know, that you're going to want to build your account size and, you know, and then always remember there's a reason why margins are higher in silver, because it's a riskier market. Plain and simple. There's more risk. That's why they charge a higher margin. And if the term margin confuses you, think of it as a deposit. Like when you go down to the grocery store to rent one of those fancy carpet shampooers, okay, if that thing has a value, you know, of $300, $400, $500, they're going to probably ask you to leave a deposit, a security deposit of some dollar amount in case you trash it, break it, or don't bring it back. They can go out and buy another one to replace it. You can't really break an S&P contract, but you can hold on to it to the point where its value is diminished down to however much money you have in your account. You no longer have money in your account that gives you the right to be in that position. Okay. Now, in a typical trade, you go short, you go long, you take your 2 points. What happens is once you're out of that contract, if you bought and you sell to get out, or you sold and you buy to get out, once you're out, what happens is your deposit that you put down, and in the case of the S&P, it's $500 per contract. Once you're out of that trade, your deposit is credited back to your account. And then, whether you realized a gain or not, then that notation is made to your account as well. In other words, when you return the carpet shampooer, if it was worth $100 more than when you took it out, right, you know, then your account balance will reflect that. If the contract lost value while it was in your possession, in other words, you went long and the market went short, or vice versa, yeah, then they're going to debit your account $100 if you're trading for 2 points. Now, this is silver, and it pays $25 a tick. That's why I adjusted the silver chart down to 2-tick range. All of our other, everything else we trade on a 4-tick range chart. And actually, we don't trade silver in the live trading room. We also don't trade 30-year bonds in the live trading room. We could, and we would use the exact same methodology, the exact same indicators. The only reason I adjusted the time frame, and this is not just 2 ticks. 2 ticks would be very, very fast. It would be way too fast for anyone to trade. This is a 2-tick range chart. And what that means is each candle is going to be exactly 2 ticks tall. Time is not an element. Volume is not an element. Volatility is not an element. It's purely price. And once price moves more than 2 ticks, a new candle is created. Here's what a 4-tick looks like. Okay. Everything's the same. We don't really need this volume in here. Let me just remove that real quick. Okay. Two ticks. So how does the trade work? Well, we'll use this most recent instance here. The first thing we look for is either a bearish or a bullish cross. Okay. That's the first thing that alerts us to the fact that we may be about to have a trade on our hands. Now, in the live trading room, Michael monitors about 6 different markets. that's not something that we recommend you attempt to do at home. And we're not grooming you for that or training you to get to the point where you're able to monitor and manage six different markets. That's overkill. The only reason we do it in the live trading room is because we're working against a two-hour shot clock. The live trading room is open from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., Monday through Friday, every trading day. And during that two-hour period of time, our goal is to show you the setup from start to finish as many times as possible. Now, if we just sit there and stare at the S&P, some days we might get a trade, some days we might get a couple trades, and every now and then we might get three or four trades. But if we were only looking at just one market, you wouldn't get to see the trade setup play through very many times. The reason we monitor so many markets during the live trading room is just to give you the opportunity to see that. That's because it's the exact same thing over and over and over and over. The first indication that we have that a trade may be setting up is either the bullish or bearish cross. And all that means is this red line here, the CFMA1, which has a different mathematical formula than this red and blue line. This green line we refer to as the BBC. Down here we just call it the green line. Those have different formulas. Now, up here, we call the CFMA1. Down here, we call it the cycle. Okay, big fancy names, right? Well, you got to call it something. And so that's really all it is. It's just us calling it something. Now, once you get across, okay, the potential now is not for a long trade, but for a short trade because we crossed below the green line. BBC, bull, bear, cross. Very simple. Nothing fancy at all. Once we cross, the next step is we need price to pull away from the green line. Okay? And so we see the cross, and we see price pull away. So far, everything's textbook, picture perfect. Then we need price to pull back. Okay? So we get across, pull away, up, pull back. Now, on the candle that pulls back to touch the BBC, we're going to look down here. Just all you have to do is follow the crosshair straight down and make sure we have bearish divergence. Typically, when you hear the term divergence, you're comparing an indicator down at the bottom to price action up at the top. When we use the term divergence, we're just talking about what's going on in that lower panel. Okay, we're talking about divergence inside of the slingshot indicator itself. Sometimes that confuses someone who's new because, you know, you've been hearing about divergence for years, and perhaps you already use divergence, some type of divergence in your trading. And so your brain goes, hey, wait a minute, that's not divergence. Bear with us. Again, you have to call things something, and so we might have been able to come up with a different term that would have been less confusing, but alas, we didn't. And so for years, that's what we've been calling it. And so when you hear us say it, we're talking about down here the cycle line. When it's below the green line, that's bearish. And when the red and blue line is above the green line, that's bullish. And you might say, why? And we say, well, because we say so. I mean, that's just, again, see, once we figured out our methodology, then we had to figure out a way to convey the concept and the idea to other people. Otherwise, we would just only be able to use it ourselves. And so, our definition, if this line is above the green line, that's bullish, divergence in the slingshot. If the cycle line is below the green, that's bearish. Okay? Don't get too tied up in a knot over it's because it's either above or below, okay? It's either above or below. Now, on this candle that pulls back and touches, it's below. It's also red. If it's red, all we need is a down close after touching, okay? That's all we need. If it had turned blue, we would need to draw a trend line, and we would need a close below the trend line. We would need additional confirmation. Because, see, the closest you'll ever come to perfection in your trading, and even though we all know that's kind of not going to happen, we strive for it. We're always looking for that thing, whatever that thing is, that will allow us to only get into the trades that are profitable. Oh, and we're not greedy. I mean, we're just looking for X number of ticks or X number of points. But, I mean, there has to be, doesn't there? Doesn't there have to be that one thing out there somewhere that, you know, somebody, some group of people, you know, the ruling elite or somebody, they know what that number is or that indicator is or that sign is or something to keep them out of trades that have no hope from the get-go. Well, unfortunately, that's what trips so many people up. Instead of focusing your time and energy on that which is real, time, energy, and money gets spent in pursuit of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, and I know some of you are yelling, hey, I've seen Sasquatch. Okay, all right. But that's not my point. Now, on this trade, which is just another trade, that's all it is, get a bearish cross. You know, you can argue, and I don't like to argue. You could say, well, isn't that a pull away right there? I mean, there's the cross, and then there's a little bit of space, and so didn't that pull away? Yeah, but the divergence down here is kind of a mess. I mean, the green line is below the red line, but the red line, look where that thing is. It's laying flat. So that's why I was using this as the example, okay? That candle right there. Silver are really tanking, along with the gold, I guess. Okay, so price pulls away, price pulls back. Now we're looking for a down close. Sometimes a candle will do double duty. What does that mean? Well, it will not only pull back, it will also give you the down close. Remember, on a short trade, you need a down close, and then you sell the open of the next candle. On a bullish trade, you're going to buy the open of the next candle after an up close, okay? So we got to touch it, and then we got to have a down close. This is a down close. Price closed, not at the top, but at the bottom. And closing price was 20.04 up. Which means the next candle opened at 20.040. And so based upon our methodology, based upon our indicator set, we would have sold the open of that candle right there. Okay? Now, there's nothing ambiguous. There's nothing ambiguous about the entry. Nothing nebulous. I know you've been places where they say, well, this looks like, you know, a pretty good neighborhood to maybe, you know, think about getting short. You know, maybe we'll get a hook in the water and see if we can't get a couple nibbles. And then 5 minutes later, you know, somebody's crowing about how they just took 10 points out of the market and shaming you because you didn't get it too. Ever been there? if you've been around trading for any length of time, you probably have. So that's why it was very important for us as we developed this methodology. We wanted it to be crystal clear. Okay? Has nothing to do with whether the trade's going to be profitable or not profitable. It's just that we need to know where the entry is to the tick. And in this case, we know that to the tick, the entry is 20.040. Now, we can see that now remember, this is a short trade, and we can see that the market sold off beautifully. And so before you go counting your silver doubloons, we got to go check how much of a drawdown was there on the trade. Now, on all the other markets, S&P, Russell, NASDAQ, soybeans, gold, crude, everything, we use a four-tick range chart, and we risk 8 ticks. That's our maximum risk on every trade. We never risk more than 8 ticks. And many people are confounded by that because they go, well, wait a minute. You know, I've traded gold. I've traded crude. I've traded natural gas. Those are very volatile markets. You can't use an 8-tick stop. You'll get stopped out a lot. Right? We know. We use very aggressive risk management. We do get stopped out a lot. All you have to do is come to the live trading room, and you'll see that. But what we really want you to see is that getting stopped out is not a bad thing. It's a good thing, okay? Getting stopped out is the very thing that will keep you in the business long enough to actually learn the business. Let me say it again. Getting stopped out is not a bad thing. Now, not only do we use 8 ticks as our maximum stop, but when I say we use aggressive risk management, we take it even a step further. As soon as that trade, it doesn't matter what market it is, as soon as it moves 4 ticks in our favor, we take our stop to break even. What? I already told you, now this is you talking, you're going, I already told you natural gas is very volatile. You can't trade it with an 8-tick stop. Now you're going to tell me you're going to trade it with a 4-tick stop? Yep. We're going to open the trade with 8. But as soon as the trade goes 4 ticks in our favor, we're going to bring our stop to break even. At this point, the worst that can happen is our look at the market is going to cost us the price of a round turn trade. And if you're trading with us, that's going to be in the vicinity of $6 for a round turn. Okay. If you're a high volume trader, you know, all things are negotiable. Some markets, because they're traded across different exchanges, have a little, you know, difference in the commission rate. But by and large, if you're going to be an S&P trader, you can figure on $6. Okay. Now, we know what kind of a trade it is because of this bearish cross. We know this is going to be a short trade if a trade develops. Short trade. We know that. Because of that. Okay? We then need price to pull away. We then need price to pull back. Once price pulls back, we need to make sure that the cycle line is below the green line. It is. It's also red, which means we don't have to worry ourselves with drawing a trend line. I'll show you one that needs a trend line so you know what I mean. Okay? We know that the entry is the open of this candle. 20.040. Okay. Now let me show you one other thing about SOAR that you may or may not know. 19.940, you would think the next number would be 19.941. It's 19.945. 950, 955, 960, 965, 970, 975. Remember I said that silver pays $25 per tick? Okay. And so a tick is not from 50 to 51. A tick is from 50 to 55. From 55 to 60. Okay. And so four of these ticks, one, two, three, four, that would give us our $100 per contract per day goal. Okay. All right. So now what we have to do is we have to look at this swing high, because this is the candle that we entered on. The swing high of this candle is 20.050. Okay, everybody see that? Swing high, 20.050. That's our drawdown, okay? Let me rephrase that. Two tick drawdown. Remember, we said that, or let's just go find that price, 20.040. One tick, two ticks, 20.050. From the entry at 20.040, two-tick drawdown. Okay. Now, because we're on a two-tick range chart here, our risk would be four ticks. On all the other markets, it's eight ticks. I've only adjusted this one because it pays $25 a tick. Everything else is the same. And it's probably another reason that we don't trade this or the bonds in the live trading room, because that little adjustment right there would be just enough to throw people off. And our whole goal in developing both the methodology and the indicator set in the manner that we did was so that it would not be confusing, and so that it would be sort of homogenized, you know, just the exact same thing for every single market. So I should have probably picked, you know, one of the more I'll do that tomorrow during the after show. I'll pick one of the markets that we trade every day in the live trading room where we have eight ticks of risk on the four-tick range chart. This is just the one I had the indicators loaded on from back on Friday. So all these other ones you'll see are set at hours and 4 hours, because I'm taking bigger picture looks at the market. Okie doke. So we have a two-tick drawdown. And if we need four ticks to make our daily goal, then that number is going to be 20.020. If we sell 20.40, 1, 2, 3, 4. Four ticks is $100, 20.020. Target, 20.020. Now, another thing you'll notice that Michael does in the live trading room is while we do have a hard stop, okay, and by hard, I mean it's right there on the platform. It's not a mental stop. It's not where we planned, you know, to get out. if the market goes there, the order is already placed. It's like a bracket order, okay, except what we do is we leave the target open. The reason we leave the target open is this is a perfectly good example of why we would want to leave the target open. Now, once price moves four ticks in our favor, okay, or in this case, two ticks in our favor, we're going to take our stop to break even. And then we're going to trail the stop, 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 until price comes back and stops us out. So we're going to get stopped out of every trade we take. Okay. Our goal, of course, is to get stopped out with a profit. And this would have been a very nice profit here. Goodness gracious, from 2040, the entry, which was... this candle right here. Okay. And there was a two tick drawdown. So from 2040 down to the swing low, what was the swing low? 19920. Let's see. 48. What was that be? 120. And so this is where it gets tricky. You got to go 120. My calculator. There it is. Got to go 120 divided by 5 times 25, $600. So this move here, this was a $600 move per contract. Okay? One contract. Now, of course, the pendulum swings both ways. If you were to let that trade go against you that distance, well, and then it just costs you $600. If you're on the right side of the trade, $600. If you're just going for our daily target, that's $100, okay? But we do leave the target open on all the trades so that, because if you catch one runner like this, that would make up for, you know, a number of trades where you were stopped out at break even, right? When you're stopped out at break even, that's going to cost, you're still paying commission on that. What we like to do is we like to get our stop to break even, and then, you know, if the market gives us another tick, now we go to break even plus a tick. That pays the commission. And then we'll continue to trail that thing up as far as we can until ultimately it turns around and it comes back and stops. We're always going to get stopped out on every trade. Hopefully with a gain, right? That's the point. The whole point of trading is you anticipate making some money. That's our mantra, to make money every day. And if you go and watch videos from the live trading room, or if you come and spend time in the live trading room, then that's what you'll see. Most every day we're able to make our daily goal pretty early in the day. Oftentimes within, you know, first couple trades, the hour. It's not a race, okay? We're simply, the reason we track it is not so that we can brag or boast about it, but just so that it's a documented fact. Because for years people have been running around the internet talking about, oh man, if you can just make 2 points a day on the S&P, oh, you could be a gajillionaire. Well, yeah, that's true. But the part they leave out is how you actually do that. That's the part we don't leave out. That's the part that we not only carefully document doing it, but we carefully document how we do it. And we carefully teach you over 90 days how you can do it. Now, as I said, our 90-day program is designed to make you guru-free so that you're able to sit down in front of a chart like this, and it doesn't matter what the symbol is. The symbol could be anything. The methodology is going to be the same, okay, on every trade. beyond the 90 days, we have what we call a two-year graduate program, and that's a little blueprint. That's all it is. It's a little blueprint you can follow that will take you up to a 20-contract trader in 24 months. Now, a lot of people have traded 20 contracts. A lot of people open their account and first day coming out of the gate trade 20 contracts. They don't do it for long, though, because the market quickly teaches them that they're not mentally prepared, psychologically prepared, emotionally prepared. They just don't have the skill sets required for trading one contract, much less 20. So we put you in the simulator until you are consistently profitable. Once you're consistently profitable in the simulator using our methodology, that's when we give you the green light to go live with one. Then we want to actually see you make money before you increase the number of contracts. Because if you're not profitable in the simulator, then you should never go live with one. And if you're not profitable with one, you should never go to two. That's just foolishness. That's throwing away your money. Okay? There are deserving charities out there that could use your money. The market doesn't need your money. Okay? CME, they're doing fine, man. They got money in the bank. So this blueprint of ours, some say, well, man, that's too slow. Well, I don't think so. We want you to make $2,000 before you go to two contracts. Man, that could take a long time. Well, it takes as long as it takes. If it takes you 10 trades every day to make your daily goal, in 47 days, you'll have made $2,000, and then you can add a second contract. Say that again? Okay. If it takes you 10 trades every day to make your daily goal, now we're only talking about $100, but if it takes you 10 trades every day to make your $100, in 47 trading days, you will have earned, after commission, $2,000 net profit. That's when we give you the green light to go to two contracts. Now, that doubles your rate of pay. We want you to stay at that level for 5 weeks. At the end of 5 weeks, we'll add a third one. Another 5 weeks, add a fourth one. At the end of 5 weeks, a fifth one. Why? Why, you ask? Why 5 weeks? Well, we looked at a lot of different numbers. Once you get up to 3, 4, and 5 contracts, I mean, your earning capacity is such that you could literally be adding a new contract every couple days. But you're not ready for that. See, you're growing two things. You're growing your account size, but you're also growing your skill level. Your skill level is not simply your ability to put, some points up on the board. It also has to do with your ability to manage your emotions and a host of other things, okay? There's a whole lot going on there. And so 5 weeks, you're learning patience. You're learning discipline. You're learning how to trade, okay? And at the end of that two-year period of time, if you've followed the blueprint, you're now at 20 contracts. Never putting at risk more than five, if you're trading the S&P, never putting at risk more than $500 of your initial seed capital, okay? Because remember, you stayed in the simulator until you were consistently profitable. And then from that point, you made $2,000 before you added another contract. Every additional contract that you add is underwritten by money that you made in the market. Profit. Not the house's money, it's your money. Okay, you earned it, right? But you're increasing your size based on profit, not on another withdrawal from the IRA or the ante or the, you know, wherever the money comes from. That makes a world of difference. It makes a difference in how you walk and talk and trade, manage your business, live your life. Huge impact all the way around, okay? For some, it's a little too slow. You know, we can't make you do anything. I mean, we can't come sit in your house, sit at your desk, sit on your chest, you know, and shake a finger at you and tell you you can't add another contract. You're going to do what you're going to do. Some people are going to leave the simulator before they ever become consistently profitable. We can't prevent that. We can tell you again and again why it makes no sense, why it's ridiculous, why you're just asking for trouble and most probably going to lose your money. But people are going to do what they're going to do. And so often I hear the story or get the email, hey, you know all that stuff you told me to do? Yeah. And I do remember because I tell the same thing to everybody. It's what I've written down in the trading plan and in the members area of the website. You know, so I don't have to scratch my head and try to remember what I told you versus what I told the guy that called before you or after you, right? Because I just tell everybody the same thing. So, yeah, I remember what I told you. Yeah, well, I did the exact opposite. Okay. Then that's pretty normal. It is? Yeah, it is. Well, why don't you warn us? Well, I did. You think back. Go read that trading plan again. It says in there that you're probably going to do exact opposite of what I tell you to do. But at least you got it out of your system. You made your trip around the mountain. Hopefully you weren't maimed too terribly. And you still have capital left to operate your business. Because that's what it is. It is a business. And so if you still have the capital to operate your business, that's when the call comes in and, hey, this, I'd like to try it again, but this time I want to do it right. Okay. And then the question is, so what do I need to do? Well, same thing. Well, no, I told you. No. What you told me was you did the opposite of everything you were supposed to do, and it didn't work out well. How about trying the, you know, where you do everything that you're supposed to do the way you're supposed to do it? You know, the part where you actually stay in the simulator until you're profitable, then you only go live with one, and then you make $2,000. Oh, that? Oh, yeah, that. Hmm? If you're looking for an adrenaline rush, jump out of an airplane. Once you go through the class, it costs like $75, I think, at one of the local airfields out here in Mesa. I think for $75, you can jump out of a perfectly good airplane on a Saturday afternoon. Got to pack your own chute. I don't know, for $75, they might, you know, if I was going to, I think I'd probably want to pack my own just to make sure it was packed properly. But I don't have any desire to do that. I don't need that kind of an adrenaline rush. But if you're the type of person that you're looking for adventure and whatever comes your way, well, find it someplace other than the market. I mean, you can buy adventure for a much lower price tag than what you can ultimately end up paying in the market. So those are words of caution. And you'll follow them or you won't. Hopefully you will. You know, it's been said for years that, you know, the only way to succeed in the market is to blow up a couple of accounts. And you know what? I used to think that was some pretty sage wisdom. I used to think that was how it had to be done. But then Michael and I sat down, we put our heads together, and we said, well, why does it have to be that way? And we came to the conclusion that it doesn't have to be that way. People have made it that way, but it doesn't have to be that way. There is a way to do it without losing all of your money first. And you know what? The financial loss versus the psychological cost. Boy, the two, you can't even compare them, right? If you don't do things right, if you do the opposite of everything we teach you, it's not only going to cost you real money, but it's going to do psychological damage. It's going to be tough to overcome. It really is. So the best thing to do is to just not do it. We've laid it out step by step, rule by rule. The blueprint is there. Use it. Just use it. Now, if you've already, you know, fallen off the wagon and you've gone astray, it's okay. Nobody's going to yell at you. Nobody's going to say, I told you so. But the sooner you send the email that says, hey, I messed up, that's where the healing begins. Okay? Second you say, hey, enough's enough. I made a mistake. I want to get things right. We step right in. We assess, you know, the damage. And then we put together a plan to get you back on track. Or in some cases, to get you on track for the first time. Just depends. But we're here, 949-42-E-MINI. 949-42-E-MINI, or you can email us, support@cfrn.net. Now, you're going to most probably get the voicemail when you call 949-42-E-MINI, all right? Leave a message. What happens is that thing transcribes your voicemail into an email, and it tracks Michael and I down wherever we are. It gives both of us your message. And then he and I, with a couple of quick texts, we decide which one's going to return that particular call. And boom. In most cases, if you call and leave a voicemail, somebody will get back to you within minutes. So when the machine comes on, don't hang up. We'll leave a message. All right, let me see if there's any final comments in the chat box here. And if so, I'll try to answer them, and then I'm going to get out of your hair. Tim. Tim said that Silver had made the move into the down. We talked last week. We did a breakdown on Silver. Do I still have that chart up? I guess I don't. That's too bad. Quite frankly. Let's see. What chart could I use? Oh, I could use this one. GSIK. Okay, this is a daily chart. No, we want K. G-S-I-K. Okay. What we had talked about last week, we pointed out there was a reverse head and shoulders. There's the head. There's the shoulder. There's the shoulder. This neckline is a 38% retracement from the swing high to the swing low. A measured move from the top of the head to the neckline is exactly the same distance as the move from here to this swing high. Okay? But the move that Tim was referring to, we had drawn fibs on this last leg up. And we had said that if we broke that 62, it could open the door for a big move on the downside. Those of you that were here last week remember that. We went pretty in-depth with that discussion. Now, to test these lows back down here, there's still another almost a dollar potential on the downside. We can also do this, this, and we can grab our fib price extension. We can go from this swing high to this swing low. To that swing high. And we can see that we've already exceeded the 100% price extension. See, we were talking about this probably last Tuesday or Wednesday, I think. Because here's today. That would be Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday. We were probably up in this area when we were discussing that. So anyway, thanks for pointing that out, Tim. It's always nice to see things come together the way you had looked at it. Let's see. John says, Dwayne, I missed the first part of this conversation. I was under the impression you were setting the profit and stop target at the same time at 2 points. When you're saying that you trail with a stop and keep the front end open, so in case it goes beyond 2 points, we profit more? Question mark? Yeah. Jay says, so in other words, John, if you want to do a bracket trade, okay, and let's say with the S&P, you want to have a 2-point stop, a 2-point target, you can do that. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's what we did for years. And with the S&P, because it's not one known to just get up and run, it kind of just channels back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Sometimes you're better served with the S&P to just have that hard target out there. But when you're trading markets like natural gas and crude and gold and other things, that thing can run. I mean, it can just take off and go. And so by leaving the target side open, I mean, you can pick up the equivalent of, you know, 2, 3, even 4 trades in one move. And so it's a personal preference. You know, in the beginning, in the simulator, just getting started, I would not want to see you put too much on yourself. So as you're learning the methodology and all of that, you're probably better served just putting the bracket in. If you're trading in one of the markets where we're going for 8 ticks, like the S&P, then that would be an 8-tick stop and an 8-tick target. If you're trading crude or gold, now those pay $10 a tick, not $12.50 like the S&P. And so there you'd have a 10-tick stop and a 10-tick target. Okay? 10-tick stop, 10-tick target. And so in the beginning, in the simulator, just so you're not having to think about too many things and try to do too many things at once, go ahead and just use that bracket, okay? Let the computer just take all the work and worry off of you so you can focus on learning to spot the setup and to move and to execute at the proper time. Once you get a little time under your belt, okay, then you can start. Actually, what you can do is you can still have a hard target, right? But if you see that market's really got some pep to it, you can just take your cursor and you can grab that stop and drag it up, okay? Not the stop, but the target. You can drag the target up. Now, we never increase, once we get into a trade, we'll never increase our stop. You should never. There's nothing that can happen once you enter a trade that would ever warrant you increasing the amount of risk that you've assigned to that trade. Not a news report, not anything. The target side, that's a whole different issue. You can push that target out and push it out and push it out and push it out until price finally runs into it. Or you can do it the other way, and that's to not have a hard target out there. And you can drag that stop up and drag it and drag it and drag it and drag it until eventually it comes back and stops you out. Okay? Hopefully that answers the question for you. But it's your business, and you can run it the way you want to run it. Okay? Initially, work with the bracket. It's less for you to think about. You're going to be in the simulator anyway. All right? This gives you the satisfaction. This gives you the confidence from seeing your trade go from entry to target, entry to target, entry to target. See, you want to get to the place where that's not an anomaly. That's not like, you know, the odd thing. You want to grow accustomed to that. Also, you want to get accustomed to price hitting your stop and knowing that that's okay too. I've seen people set for, you know, weeks, months without putting on a trade because they're trying to figure out that way. There's got to be a way that I only get into the trades that go in the direction I want them to go. There's got to be a way that I don't have to know the pain and agony of being stopped out. Oh, God, that's a painful journey. It is. And you'll find a lot of bodies on the trail. Good people. Now, Jay, in answer to your question, do you make $2,000 each time before adding another contract? Well, here's the thing. Once you go to two contracts, you're making $200 a day, not $100 a day. So, I mean, if you actually, you know, and you're not, but once you've made the move to two contracts, we'll do some fast math. Instead of 100 a day, you're making 200 a day, okay? And so that's $1,000 a week. That's $4,000. Well, that would be $5,000 in 5 weeks, right? 200 a day. 200 a day times 5 days. It's $1,000 times 5 weeks. It's $5,000. But we both know that you're not going to get it in one trade every day. So let's say it takes you 10 trades. How about that? Let's say it takes you 10 trades every day to get to your goal. Okay. Well, if you're paying $6 a round turn, just to use a round number, you're trading two contracts times $6. That's $12. But it's taking you 10 trades to get to your goal. That's $120 that you're paying out in commissions. You get to keep $80, okay? So on a 5-day week, that's $400. Over 5 weeks, that's going to be exactly $2,000, right? Now, that's if it took you 10 trades every day to make your $200, right? Okay, now let's go to, let's say you get through that period and now you're at the three contract stage, okay? So now your daily earnings are $300, but let's say that it still takes you 10 trades every day to get there. Three contracts, $300. One contract, $100. Two contracts, $200. See, it's $100 per contract Okay. And so $300 a day times 5 days is $1,500. $1,500 times 5 weeks equals $7,500. Okay? Now, let's say it takes you still 10 trades every day to get to your daily goal. Okay? We've got to figure out what our cost of doing business is. We're taking 10 trades a day. It costs us $6 round turn per trade, so that's $60. We're trading 3 contracts, so that's $180, right? So in order for us to make $300, if we use 10 trades to make $300, we're going to pay out $180 in commission. That means we get to keep $120. So $120 times 5 days times 5 weeks equals $3,000. That's after commissions, okay? So in the simulator, you made that move to one contract. You stayed with the one until you made $2,000. When you added that second contract, okay, if it took you 10 trades every single day during the 5 weeks, you would make another $2,000. But once you go to the third contract, okay, if it still takes you 10 trades every day to get to your goal, you're going to make $3,000 during that 5 week period. Let's just do one more, and then you'll have the rhythm and you'll know how to do the math on your own. So you're trading 4 contracts, making $400 a day gross. However, it's still taking you 10 trades, so we got to do that math. 4 times $6 round turn, $24, times 10 trades, cost of doing business, your commissions, $240. So 400 minus 240 leaves you with $160. Okay? Now remember, we're up to 4 contracts. We're grossing 400 a day, but it's still taking us 10 trades every single day to get to that daily goal. So our cost of commission each day is $240. Our net, part we get to keep, is $160. So we go 160 times 5 days in a week times 5 weeks equals $4,000. So in answer to your question, when you go to 2 contracts, if it takes you 10 trades a day to get the job done, during that 5 week period, you'll make $2,000. Once you go to 3 contracts, if it takes you 10 trades a day to get the job done, you're going to make $3,000 during that 5 week period. Once you go to 4 contracts, if it takes you 10 trades a day to get the job done, you're going to make $4,000 during that 5 week period. Do you see the pattern that's building here? Now, what about the days that you actually, you know, have a really good day and it only takes you 3 trades to get those 2 points? What happens to those other 7 trades? They roll over. and they never expire. They never go bad. Now, let me let that sink in a little bit. Now, there'll be some days you'll actually get it done in one. You'll put on one trade, it'll run the 2 points, and you'll be done. So, 9 rollover. And then there'll be lots of days where it takes 7. Well, you've got 3 rolling over. Then there'll be days when it takes 8. You've got 2 rolling over. All of those rollover trades go into your little piggy bank. Okay? And as long as you stay on track and you continue to make your $100 per contract per day, at the end of 24 months, you will have not only grown your account size substantially to where it can more than support trading 20 contracts, but you've grown skill-wise, your emotions, every part of you has matured and evolved as a professional trader. Okay? Now, I use the worst case scenario math. I like to think it's worst case. This set of numbers gives you the luxury of 10 trades every day to get to your daily goal. But pretty soon you start stacking up, you know, a couple good days, and all of a sudden you come in one day and you realize, man, I've got 40 trades to make my $100 per contract. And then I've got 60. And then I've got 70. And pretty soon you realize that it's almost a comical number of trades that you have available at your disposal. Now, that doesn't mean you act crazy and start shooting from the hip or any of that kind of stuff. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. One more moment. Okay. So, John, I think that answered your question. And I think I've got all the questions answered at this point. Oh, let me look. Dwayne, I put screenshots in your inbox Friday. Okay. I'll go take a look at them. Okay, okay. Okay. Let's see, David says, any way to reduce the daily trading expense sounds high to me. $240 in commissions for $160 net trading profits. Well, David, that's if it takes you 10 trades to make $100 per contract. The S&P pays $50 per point. So 2 points makes you $100. Do you follow me on that, David? Are Are you with me? Okay. And so do you think it – does it take you 10 trades every day to make 2 points? Or could you do it in one trade some days, or 2 trades, or 3 trades, or 5 trades? Remember, you're only looking for 2 points. That's 8 ticks in the S&P, if you're trading the S&P. If you're trading gold or crude or natural gas, then it's 10 ticks. Or do you have enough trading experience to answer that? Maybe you don't have enough trading experience to be able to, you know, really answer that question. Okay, but see, okay, I appreciate you're just starting to learn about our system, okay? But what I want you to think about is think about whatever system you've used in the past, okay? I'm assuming you had some other methodology that you used. Could you make 2 points in 10 trades or less? That's the whole key right there. So I'll leave you with that. I'll leave you with that thought. Okay. And feel free to call me, 949-42-E-MINI, 949-42-E-MINI, or shoot an email, support@cfrn.net. If you need some additional help or explanation, I'll be happy to talk with you on the phone. And if need be, we can launch a private go-to meeting. If you're on the free trial right now, you know, in fact, that's probably a good idea. Anyone that's on the free trial, you should probably request some private one-on-one time during your 5-day free trial. Now, Bert's on vacation this week, so we're stretched a little bit thin, but we'll get to you. Don't worry. Just email in your request, okay? Email in your request. Hey, I'd like to spend a little bit of time on the phone. Give me an idea where you're at, what you're doing, how you're coming along, you know, what questions you might have, where you might be, you know, hung up. And it might be something we can resolve with a quick phone call. But if we need to launch a private go-to meeting, then we're happy to do that, if that's what it takes. Okay? All right. One more time, 949, and you're correct, David, because your original comment said, sounds high to me that I got to spend $240 in commissions to make $160 profit. Well, it is. Hopefully, it isn't going to take you 10 trades every single day. I mean, hopefully. Hopefully, you're going to get it done in a couple or three, but there are going to be days, okay? There's going to be days when you get stopped out 2 times in a row for a full 8 ticks. So you're down 16 ticks on the day. So you got to, you know, first, you got to get back to break even on the day. Good thing you got 10 trades. So maybe it takes you 4 of those trades just to get back to break even. Well, now you've used up 6 of your trades to get to break even. But then on your 7th trade, boom, it just runs right to the target. And so what started out just like horrible, you were feeling, you know, just sick to your stomach because, you know, you were 30 minutes into the day, 2 trades into the day, you're down 16 ticks. But you took 4 more trades, got back to break even, that's 6 trades total, and then your 7th trade just ran right to the target. You got filled, went to the target, boom. So a horrible day became a great day because you not only made your daily goal, but now you got 3 trades to roll over to tomorrow. And so when you come in tomorrow, you got 13 trades available to go make your $100. That's how it works. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, you got to think. It is a little bit of a brain twister. You got to wrap your mind around that. But the entire reason for breaking it down that way and helping you to understand it in that way is to take the pressure off. Because almost every single person calls me with, I'm doing great in the simulator, and I'm going live tomorrow. And I say, okay, don't change a thing. Oh, no, I won't, man. I'm doing awesome. I'm not going to change a thing. Okay. A couple days go by, I get this phone call. Man, things aren't working out. Oh, what's wrong? Well, I don't know. I was doing great in the simulator, and then I went live, and then all of a sudden I'm not doing great. Oh, okay. Well, what did you change? Nothing. Yeah, you did. No, I didn't. You calling me a liar? No, I'm not calling you a liar. I'm just asking you what you changed. Well, I didn't think I changed anything. Well, if you're getting different results, the same ingredients in the same oven at the same temperature will always bake the same cake. Now, there is the issue of timing, okay? See, here's the thing. Once you learn the trade setup, once you learn the methodology, once you understand all the different, you know, we've only got just a handful of indicators, and once you learn their goofy little names and what they're supposed to do and whatnot, et cetera, okay? The only thing that's left is timing. And I don't call it luck because I don't think it's a luck issue. When Michael comes in every morning and starts trading live, he does the exact same thing every single day. Well, then why is it that some days he gets his daily goal in one trade and some days, like today, it takes two? And some days it takes, you know, quite a bit more. Timing. Think of the market as this never-ending flow of opportunity. It's flowing, it might be flowing north, right? Long trades, might be flowing south, short trades. You can have a trend up day. In other words, it's the type of day where at the end of the day, you look at the chart, and the market just basically went straight up like a missile, right? And all you did all day long was put in buy orders, and yet you still lost money. How's that possible? Well, if you're looking at an hourly chart, for an example, it could be green candle after green candle after green candle after green candle. But if you go inside of those hourly candles and you drill down to a smaller time frame, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 1 minute, you know, a range chart, some kind of tick chart, whatever it might be, you'll see that the markets, none of them ever really travel in a perfectly straight line. I mean, this silver chart that I have up right now, that's a bit of an anomaly where you see that down leg. I mean, that's about as straight a move as you'll ever see in any markets, in any market. I mean, this just, but we go to something, oh, let's see, what have I got? This will probably be a good example here. See that big hour right there in the euro today? If we break that down into 5-minute chunks, see what it looks like. Yeah, that still kind of went straight up. Well, okay. Let's say you bought here. Or you bought here. Or you bought here. It's a trend up day. The market is just going up. But if you entered long here, you got stopped out. If you entered long here, you got stopped out. Even if you entered long here, depending upon the size of your stop, you could have gotten stopped out here. If you went long here, you could have gotten stopped out in here. Even if you went long, I mean, there's not even, now remember, these are 5 minutes. If you went long right there, by the time this thing drew all the way back over here, you could have gotten stopped out, see? So when I say timing, okay, think of the market as this river flowing with opportunity, okay? If you step into the flow right as the market's putting in a high, and all it's doing is pulling back, because that's what the market does. Leg retrace, leg retrace, leg retrace. Until it runs as far as it's going to run in that direction, and then it goes leg, retrace, and then it doesn't give you a new leg. See, like right here, there's leg, retrace, leg, retrace, leg, retrace, leg, retrace. We didn't get another leg. We ran out of legs. See? Had this big move, leg, retrace. There's a low, and then a lower low, and then a lower low. We should have gotten another low, a lower low, but we didn't. We got a higher low. And right there, that tips us that the market may be about to do something different. And it did. It did a bullish cross, and it's poised, you know, for a move higher. Okay? And so, that's why, once you understand the methodology, once you understand the indicators and their little funny names, then it becomes a matter of timing. Are you in sync with the market? Are you getting in as the next leg begins? Or are you getting in as that leg is just about to run out of energy? How many times have you, if you've been around trading any length of time, you've asked yourself more than a few times, why is it, you know, every time I get in, the market goes the other way? Well, many times the answer is the market had just completed a leg, either up or down, and you stepped in just as it was getting ready to make its retracement. I have the worst luck. Don't say that. Don't say that. Figure out what you've got to do to look at the chart so that you can somehow get in sync with the ebb and flow. Now, most markets don't stay in long-term trends, okay? They'll trend just long enough to allow you to be able to go, hey, we've got an uptrend. But then it's going up. Leg, retrace, leg, retrace, leg, retrace. But, hey, wait a minute. I was supposed to get another leg here. No, the markets ran out of energy. The buying power has been depleted at this level. So price now needs to take a deeper retracement to try to find some buying support to put in another leg. As price makes that retracement to try to find buying support to put in another leg, if it can't find it, then the retracement becomes a reversal. And that's when you end up saying, man, every time I get in the market, it runs the other way. You got to think about what your motivation is for getting in the market, whether you're using our methodology or not. If you're using some other methodology, you just have to ask yourself, we know why we get into the market when we get into the market, because in our little universe, all the stars have aligned. And so we know without any ambiguity whatsoever if it's time for us to get long or get short, like on that little silver trade there that I showed you. Or for anyone that was in the live trading room today, you saw Michael taking trades based not really on any bigger picture scenario, but in our little universe, we just wait for, you know, we've only got like five stars in our sky. And when those five stars align, that gives us enough room to hopefully take 8-10 ticks out of the market, depending upon which market we're trading, and be done. Now, that doesn't mean that you as an individual can't layer that on top of a larger time frame. Like maybe you've got your four tick range up, you're trading the heck out of that, boy. You're really getting the hang of that thing. But you're also over here to the side, you've got a 15 minute or a 30 minute or an hourly chart of the same market running. And you see that that larger time frame of that same market just made a 50% retracement. And it looks like it's starting to inch higher off of that 50% retracement. And you look over at your four tick range, and it's giving you a buy signal. Whoa, on my four tick range, I'm getting a buy signal. And I'm bouncing off a 50% Fib retracement on a larger time frame at the same time. That's a match made in heaven. Doesn't mean all those trades are going to be profitable, though. Despite your best efforts, there's going to be trades that just get stopped out. You enter that trade, and it's doomed from the start. It doesn't even go one tick in your favor. Are you bad? Are you stupid? Is there something you don't understand? Are your indicators broken? No. Just your timing was off. That's all. Don't beat yourself up. Don't beat yourself up for things you can't control. The only time you would ever get sideways with yourself is if you don't follow the rules. As long as you follow the rules that we've written down that are part of the system, and as a partner, you're going to get a PDF that teaches you how to write your own business plan and your own trading plan, okay? And as you work your way through that, every successful business has a business plan and an operations manual. And they're two different things, two very different things. Because of the industry that we're in, we call one a business plan and the other a trading plan. See, when you're talking to your banker, your banker wants to hear about the business plan, how you're going to make the 2 points a day or whatever. What he's not interested in is your trading plan. In other words, the how you're going to get 2 points a day, he's not interested in that. I hope this analogy is working for you, because it's about as good as I got. You'll think on it. You'll dwell on it. You'll watch it. You'll ponder. And then you'll be in the shower or some other place, or you'll be driving, and you'll go, I got it. Now I know what he's talking about. Well, now it makes sense. Now I understand. Good. Remember, trading's not easy, but it can be simple. Say that again. It's worth repeating, and it's certainly worth remembering. Trading's not easy, but it can be simple. So I am going to leave you with that thought today. I'm going to check the chat box one last time. Make sure I'm not leaving any unanswered questions. That's right, Jay. You got it, buddy. All right. That's it, guys. I got to run. We're way past our time. So thank you all very much for tuning in today. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with his mercy and with his grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.